Hey folks, Ben Birch here from White Rose Society. I don't usually interrupt your regularly scheduled programming, so I'll keep this brief. I am currently holding a fund drive to keep White Rose on the air. If you think what I do here is valuable, please visit our homepage at www.whiterosesociety.org and chip in to defray the substantial costs of this service. Thank you very much.
Go. Head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation cussing and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head on with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Welcome to Monday. Welcome to a brand new week of Conversation Radio. Welcome to the Horn. And a very good afternoon, good evening, good morning to you, depending on where you are on the planet, this being planetary radio and all. Oh, goodness me, I bailed out on Friday, and I tender to you my sincere apologies for doing that, but yeah, I'm still getting better from the gut business, and it was being a little persnickety. So rather than go ick in the middle of it, right, so I bailed, and that's about as much detail as anybody wants. But I'm back, hopefully for a rock-solid week of what you've come to expect from this program and from the Horn. Where to start? Oh, gosh. I'm less than thrilled at the idea of, Tony Snow's dead, okay? We all knew he was dying when he turned gray before our very eyes in front of the cameras. And people are trying to be as decent about it as they possibly can. He was 53 years old. Goodbye, Tony. And at the risk of being really, that's as nice as I'm going to get, okay? So that's it. That's it. Do you want to talk about Tony Snow's passing? You know what the phone number is. 877-443-2366, 877, the numeral 4, head on. Or on your own nickel, 304-658-3333. If that's what you want to bring to the table, we will talk about it. Maybe we can talk about his tar baby comment. Or his racism is only a memory comment. We can do that. And, of course, the other thing that I think I am supposed to, you know, you get a sort of a pulse beat feel for how this stuff is going to come off. And I think I'm supposed to manifest a whole bunch of outrage over the New Yorker cover, too. Which I'm not going to do. Look, you know, the Obama campaign came out and said that this is scurrilous and it's trashy and a number of other things. And it may well be. It's also parody and satire. And I guess the New Yorker cover would have worked better had we done anything or had the cartoonist drawn, you know, like the Pat Oliphant cartoons where the little tiny creature down in the corner who has the snarky closing line? Well, maybe if the cartoon had been drawn with a couple of the ignorant, knuckle-walking, mouth-breathing, right-wing faithful, you know, maybe make one of them all corpulent like Jerry Falwell or Dobson or any of those other freaks, and make the other one, you know what I'm talking about, and then make the rest of the cartoon be an imagination balloon. Then maybe people would have gotten it. But no, people didn't get it. So there you have it. And but I'm not going to work myself into a froth, because come on, people, it's satire, it's parody. What's being satirized isn't Barack and Michelle Obama. What's being satirized are the right-wing freaks who have spread this malicious gossip for months and months and months and, well, frankly, years now, if you recall the articles we talked about a couple of weeks ago. So I'm not going to go there. Not going to do it. What I'm going to do, however, is go to the phones. Hi, welcome to the program.
Bob, it's Sandra.
Sandra, what a wonderful way to start my Monday evening.
Yes, I had to call you because I was rolling. Your friend down in Alabama must be having a good time.
Now, see, I was going to go there, too. he's having a better time than probably most people should be having.
And
Loretta is...
She must, I mean, because I was howling, because I thought, are you kidding me, when I saw that story?
Oh, well, you probably haven't heard what we did with the story.
Oh, no, I just am like... You know, it's just outrageous. Anyway,
John Fox and I, every now and then I get bitten by the parody bug, and John Fox turns them into songs. And so in commemoration of the whole Troy King thing going down in Alabama, and by the way, he wasn't, there was no report on whether or not he was at church on Sunday, you know, and Troy King goes every time they open the doors there because him's a fundamentalist. And he didn't make it to the state DA's conference at Point Clear, Alabama. And let me tell you, Point Clear, Alabama is a beautiful place. It sits on the eastern shore of Mobile Bay, and there is no more beautiful spot on God's green earth.
I always wanted to take a road trip to the beaches down there. I've always heard they were pretty good.
Oh, they're exquisite, and that is a heck of a resort too. And he didn't show up for that one either.
Well, the thing is, did his wife catch him with?
That's one of the stories that his wife caught him in flagrante delicto, which is Latin for in bed with a guy. Caught him in bed with a guy. There's another one that he was playing with a boy toy from college, or one of his assistant deputy attorney general staff members, and there's just too much smoke around this for there not to be any fire. And his silence is deafening.
Well, yeah, the silence is sort of, you know, that just sort of tells me all I need to know. But I just, you know, it's just sort of, if it wasn't, it's just unbelievable. It's like clockwork with these freaks.
Well, it is, because they're hypocrites, and because they're all closeted up, sexually speaking, horribly, horribly repressed. And, goodness gracious, this thing just, you realize that he was the leader of John McCain's Alabama leadership team, don't you, Sandra?
Well, aren't they always?
Yeah. And guess what?
What?
All references to Troy King have been scrubbed from the John McCain website.
Well, what about that pig, Graham? Have they scrubbed him, too?
No, because he hasn't really been caught yet.
God, he's horrible. Every time I hear that Phil Graham, I just,
Oh, I thought you were talking about Lindsey Graham. Lindsey Graham's the closet case that's a big pal of John McCain, too.
Well, yeah, he's... That queen, I don't understand how he gets away with it. That he hasn't been outed yet, that guy. Maybe he's a celibate queen. Something's up.
I think it's that southern thing that Peter Godbold and I were talking about the other night on the Horn Section, where... Yeah, everybody knows. There's no reason to make any noise about it. You know, he is what he is, and we try to pretend that he isn't and look the other way and pretend that he's got upstanding, pig-licking family values.
Well, what about that leader of the Republican leader of the Senate? He's definitely a queen, isn't he?
Oh, Mitch McConnell? he certainly gives on that way, and it looks that looks like a marriage of convenience between him and Elaine Chao by any stretch of the imagination.
The beard is what gives. You know, I can't quite work that one out. That don't look right, and he don't look right. Shoot.
No.
But no, I didn't. You know, I didn't call for anything far reaching. Trust me, I just wanted to to see what you thought about that, Alan, because it's just so, it's so wrong, and these people are so disgusting with their hypocrisy, you know. Otherwise, I wouldn't care, you know what I mean?
Right, and Loretta Knoll has said the same thing. I keep saying it. It's not about the sex. It's about the hypocrisy. And that's not that hard to figure out.
But, you know, let me ask you something else. Are these women who are married to these freaks, I mean, do they know what's going on, or are they just...
Have you seen the picture of Mrs. King?
I haven't. I have thought about looking it up. I haven't.
Okay, well, I'll tell you what. Great way to see it is to go to YouTube and just search for I'm Troy King and I'll Blow. Okay, that's the video that our chat room moderator ELO did to our new parody song. I think you'll giggle heartily, Sandra.
Oh no, I'll definitely.
And you'll see her stand. There's a picture of her and fundamentalist Alabama Governor Bob Riley and fundamentalist Attorney General Troy King while Troy's taking the oath. And it all just, you know, you see that picture, Sandra, and everything just becomes crystal clear.
Well, is it true that Karl Rove's wife is from Alabama too?
I believe, or I know that they've got substantial Alabama contacts.
No, I think I heard that she was from there, and I'm just like, he's another one that's somebody's butt boy. I believe that. I look at that fool and I think,
go and Google Victor Ash and George W. Bush.
Oh, is that the Las Vegas? Oh,
the Las Vegas.
Adam Bo?
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And, you know, this stuff goes all the way to the top, you know.
I know.
Because there are betters, and there's no such thing as sexual, I don't believe there's anything, there's such thing as sexual immorality as long as everybody's consenting. But, you know, they lord it over us and declare who can be what and how you're going to do it and everything, except for them. And there's a separate set of rules for them, you know.
George Bush is all, I mean, I look at him, I just think, he's so asexual, but... Notwithstanding, I wouldn't be surprised about him either. All them freaks. You know what I mean?
The questions have never been answered about Jeff Gannon to this day.
Well, he was in there doing something. You know what I mean? 100 times? How many times?
Yeah, he wasn't delivering pizza.
Shut up, man. I mean, that's a given. It's amazing how with Republicans, these questions are never asked. But with Democrats, it's like nonstop, you know?
Sure, and until they get caught. Well, I fully... See, this is, it's so weird. The Troy King thing just really wants to blow up. But it was said that he had a press conference scheduled for today to come out and vociferously deny the vicious, rabid smears against him, except for the fact that the Birmingham News didn't run the story that he needed them to run so he could come out and deny the vicious rumors against him.
Oh, no. I mean, yeah, he's pretty much one and done. I mean... That's what happens to the hypocrites, you know. It's hard to rebound from that, you know.
It is, and you hope so, because, frankly, the laws of the state of Alabama are in jeopardy. I've read testimony, just doing some basic research, Sandra, I read testimony that he gave to the Senate, I believe, a few years back, talking about Alabama and consent decrees. Consent decrees are these means by which federal lawsuits are settled. And then they persist until the problem appears not to exist anymore. And there was one of those regarding African American folks who worked for the state highway department down there. And there he was in front of the United States Senate in back when it was run by the Republicans, moaning and groaning about how Alabama was having to pay legal fees and attorney fees for all these African American highway department workers who kept bringing suits because Alabama had been discriminatory to them, and couldn't we please have some relief from it? No, kidding.
They're lucky that all them black people don't sue for slavery not ending before the goddamn World War II. You know what I'm saying?
or before the end of the 20th century, if you want to get right. Yeah.
No, I mean, there's, you know, and please. I can even go there, but it's just like some sort of... you know, bad nightmare for most blacks. Most of the blacks I know from Alabama, you know where they are? They're not in Alabama.
Not in Alabama. Right, yeah.
Yeah, I'm sorry to say. I know Alabama's beautiful. It looks great, but I'm sorry. All the people I know, they, you know, made a B. If they could, they got the hell out of there.
Sure, whether it was to St. Louis or Chicago or Kansas City or New York. And, well, look, our favorite human being, Condoleezza Rice.
She got up out of there, too.
I mean, her granny and granddad were literally sharecroppers.
Yeah, well, wasn't she friends with those poor girls who blew up?
Right.
Right. I mean, no. I mean, I'm just saying, it's like, I don't, you know, those places are, you know, pretty scary for people of color. Although I know a lot of them, you know, live down there. That's how it goes. But, yikes. When the power structure is like that man, that king, I mean, you really got to wonder what's going on, you know?
And the thing is, when the power structure gets nervous, Sandra, things get worse.
They do, don't they?
Yeah, they do.
Look at the state of this country. I can't even believe how it's all disintegrating. The whole bailout is just so blatant and unrepentant. I just am shaking my head thinking, well, how much more are these people going to take, you know?
And I sat down and I watched an old movie last night with my wife, Sandra. We watched Warren Beatty's movie, Reds.
Oh, that movie, yeah. It had been a long time
since I had seen it. But there's some great writing in it. And there are some lines, because Jack Reed was, of course, dedicated to the prospect that the revolution would come. And that was a time when that was a believable thought. But see, I've gotten to this point where I don't think America, and I'm not trying to be grim or anything, but I don't think anything changes in America. We'll rearrange the deck chairs, but we're still hold below the waterline. You know what I mean?
Well, yeah, and also there's 300 million people here, so you have a lot of disposable people to go. You know what I mean? And I hate to be that cruel, but that's what I look at. I do a bit of work with literacy and, you know, tutoring adults and all this sort of stuff. And I'm just sort of constantly in a state of being appalled by just the lack of resources, access, and everything else that these people have. You see what I'm saying?
Yes, I do.
And these people, you know, being me too, but I'm just saying that, you know, there's a lot of disposability in this country. So I hear you. I agree with you. I think that this train to hell can go on for a while.
And as long as everybody's wearing their American flag lapel pin that was made by a Chinese slave laborer, and we've got our yellow ribbon magnet on the back of our gas-guzzling SUV, all is well with the world. And that's a hard thing for me to admit, and it's a hard thing to have come out of my mouth. And it's mighty early in the program to be running the warm bath and getting the razor blades.
Oh, I know, but I mean, you know, the government is just full of deaths, murderers, and you know, it's just disheartening.
Sandra, when I saw the photograph of George Bush signing the telecom immunity bill,
Please. And
I saw my senator, John D. Rockefeller IV, leaning over and grinning like a fox eating poop out of a wire brush, it put me off my kibble for a day.
And I noticed that Cheney came out of the woodwork for that, too. Did you notice?
Yeah, with that sort of rictus grin on his face.
God, he's horrible. Listen, I'm thinking, you know, they always talk about the best health care in the world. It must be true, because that freak continues on. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah, I mean, he's got everything but the Vader mask.
I mean, his shoe size keeps increasing. I'm like, drop dead already, you know, but it ain't happening. And you know, hypothetically drop dead. Let me put that out there.
I don't want
him knocking at my door.
I don't think we could stand the eulogy of what a great man Dick Cheney was. I'd run into the hills just screaming.
Well, no, but anyway, though, but, you know, he popped up out of wherever that kind of hell hole he comes out of now and then. And that, I saw that picture and that horrible, your senator. I mean, all of it was just nauseating, you know, but, and more disturbing, like you said, where there's no outrage. And, you know, I would think that these bailouts would provoke people, but that ain't doing nothing either.
No. Welfare for Bear Stearns, nothing. Nothing. Absolutely nothing.
You know, and I even read in the paper, well, are they going to nationalize? And I'm like, wow, I never even seen those words associated with anything American ever. And I saw it with these two mortgage houses. And they're going to nationalize it and do what with the profits?
Well, that's the thing, though. Paul Krugman pointed that out very well, Sandra. He said, we privatize the profits.
Yeah, and socialize the risks.
Socialize the risks and the losses.
It's always free market for the people, but socialism for the rich. I mean, can you see how warped? I bet Marx is spinning. I bet he didn't think his shit would play out like this.
Oh, I know. The Emma Goldmans, the Max Eastmans, all those people that were in that movie last night. You know, John Reed himself.
Mm.
You know, big Bill Haywood. Oh Lord, I know.
Yeah, and I mean that's what it is though. It's so, you know, it's socialism for all the people who already got it all. I mean, it's so warped and twisted.
Oh, and Dick Cheney's health report card came out in the last day or so, maybe even today. Did you catch that, Sandra?
I heard that he was doing A-okay. Right?
Yeah, the doctor said he is in acceptable condition for a man of his age and health status.
Yeah, that's because they took a heart from some poor sucker at Gitmo and put it inside him, no doubt.
I think they just let him eat him.
Ugh,
they just take the red, warm, beating hearts and feed them to him like some sort of Aztec god.
No, and it's just like all in slow motion. I don't think November is ever going to come, Bob. I've decided that we're just going to be stuck.
I'm at this 6 month place, Sandra, that just makes me. It can't happen soon enough, and yet on the other hand, I can't get on board with these people who say, listen, Bob, you know, you get a little too worked up. It's going to be Obama. It's going to be okay. It's going to be a landslide.
Oh, no. I don't. You know what? I know you were talking about you didn't want to mention that whole New Yorker cover, but I have to say I have no idea what's going on in the minds of these folks. Why would they do a cover like that?
What? Yeah, there's the question of why now?
And I understand that it's satire for, you know, the vast majority of people who even glance at that magazine. But, you know, they're going to run that on TV nonstop, and people see that. And I don't know. I just think that it was just not a very clever move. But I'm not really – I'm just getting to the point more and more where I really don't give a F.
See, I looked at it this morning when I saw the emails start hitting and stuff, Sandra, and I looked at it, you know, you got to pay attention to the details, and the room is oval, and, you know, there's, you know, Uncle Osama's portrait hanging over the fireplace with the American flag burning in it.
Burning in the fire.
And the one thing nobody's mentioned is, there's a flag burning in the fireplace, but nobody's mentioned that Barack Obama doesn't have a flag pin on his Muslim getup. Or maybe that's what I'm supposed to notice.
Well, not only that, but I have to say I almost fell out when I saw the fist bump. That shit was killing me.
Now see, you laughed at it. You laughed at it, and you know you did.
And the afro, you know, the Angela Davis afro. That's like...
I've been trying to think of her name all day long. Yes, the Angela. Yes, that's
like,
what that is.
I was like, no, they didn't. I just thought, oh my god. See, it would be funny if race relations was somewhat stabilized in this country, but there is not. But I have to say, I was rolling. I said, they must be freaking out at the old Obama can't stand in front of any Muslim women campaign. There had to be
an artistic choice made on the cartoonist point at some point to either put her in a burqa or in the Black Panther garb.
No. They had to go that way because, you know, they got her all hyped up like she's some sort of black militant that's going round up all the whiteys once she's in power. They got that working. And also the fact that he could have married a white woman, but he didn't. He black. You understand what I'm saying?
No. But did you know?
Nothing.
Did you catch how light they made him?
Please. Oh, no. Look how dark she got her. Obviously, her mama's black and her daddy's black. She black. And so they go wrong with it. I mean, I feel bad for his family, I got to say.
You know, it's just not a... I agree with you. The timing is questionable, and I saw where the editor said, "Well, you know, we've done these sort of things in the past, and blah 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 blah." But really, why? And I really think I've got the solution to this.
Mm.
If they had made that a great big thought bubble with a couple of Bubbas down in the corner doing the thinking, then it would be okay. It would make more sense. and put something on the cover to make a comment about it. But you got to turn all the way to the table of contents before you find out what the reference is.
I hear what you're saying. I mean, that would have made it a little bit more decipherable for the other people. You know what I'm saying? But as it is, it's just a bit of a mess. And I keep going back to, I just think that the press, left, right, or whatever, you know, they just don't know how to approach the coming darkies in the White House. Let's be honest.
It goes all the way back to that button they were selling at the Republican state convention in Texas. If Obama's elected, can we still call it the White House?
Right, right. And, you know, everyone was all aghast and outraged by it. I'm like, come on, yo. Stop lying. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Stop lying to yourself. You know, you're sitting around thinking about stuff like that. That's the thing about America that kills me. It's all this sort of fake outrage when we know what time it is. And Obama, you know, I don't know what he thought, where he was running. It's America. You know what I mean?
Well, it so very much is. And see, my problem, Sandra, is that if I pick up any given garden variety copy of The New Yorker, I can read the articles and understand the articles. Half the cartoons I don't get.
Yeah.
And I have this sneaking suspicion that there are terribly urbane wits somewhere in the city of New York who are saying, oh, my God, that's hilarious. And
well,
I'm going,
exactly.
What?
Yeah. I know. They're too clever by half. You know what I'm saying? It's that whole mentality. But unfortunately, you know, they're going to run this particular cover into the ground, you know.
Well, the worst part of it, though, is I was emailing with a listener earlier today, Sandra, about this whole thing. And I said, I get the satire. But the problem isn't us who get the satire. I mean, you just proved that it is possible to look at that and get a big old laugh. And you're not laughing at Mr. and Mrs. Obama. You're laughing at the necks out there who think that this is reality.
Right, right.
And so I'm emailing back and forth, and I wrote back and I said the tragedy out of all this is that this cover, this New Yorker cover, is going to hang in the pit at a Jiffy Lube. And it's going to be in some cracker dude's the insurance office under the glass on his desk.
Well, yeah, that's what I mean. Exactly.
And lo and behold, they're not going to get that this is a joke not on the Obamas but on them. And lo and behold, I went over to Media Matters, and guess what? I'm a prophet again. I mean, I'm going to have to get some sort of a uniform pretty soon or get the new Magic 8-Ball spiffed up or something because I'm getting pretty good at this, Sandra. Well, it turns out that World Nut Daily, which is, you know, the right-wing rag.
That freak used to be the editor of the Sacramento Union. I know who you're talking about.
World Nut Daily did a poll on it. And lo and behold, 60% of the World Nut Daily readership that clicked the little buttons and, you know, in between the time that they spend licking the monitor or whatever, because they're not real sharp, the question was, sound off on the New Yorker's cover with turban-wearing Obama gun-toting wife. 1,151 people had responded at the time this screenshot was grabbed, Sandra. 0%, 2 votes said it's obvious the New Yorker wants McCain to win. 1%, 7 votes said this is probably a joke and is not intended to hit newsstands. 1% said it's obvious the New Yorker wants Obama to win. 1%, 11 people, relatively intelligent human beings who said there's no such thing as bad publicity. But then you go all the way to the top, 60%, 689 of those responding at the time this screen capture was taken said, the image isn't too far from the dangerous truth about the Obama family.
I mean, it's not funny, but it's just so typical, you know? I mean, so I can understand why they're campaigning.
I just saw the cartoon again. I'm sorry.
Oh, it's probably running scared. Yeah, I don't know. You listen, the cartoon, yeah, of course I laughed, you know. All this stuff is funny to me.
And it's funny, but again, it's funny to me because I, you know, even without the little balloon there, I see the little rednecks down in the corner thinking it.
Well, no, but see, I'm looking at it now too, and I forgot about the ammo. They gotta be crazy. That's funny. This whole, Oh, this is the homeboy on him. Oh, no, this is really, wow. It's
the little combat boots. Oh, my God, the little combat boots.
Okay, you know what? See, this is, yeah, I don't. Yeah. Well, anyway, all these.
But yeah, this is. But this is urbane. You're right. This is urbane sophistication that is too clever by half.
It is too clever by half. That's just it. But you know, that sort of those comments from the righty. I mean, maybe it's just going to be. Well, everyone either is one way or the other already with it, so it's not going to make any difference. There's always that.
No. They keep telling us that this that. Independent America in the middle of the road out there still hasn't made their mind up, and that's who Obama and McCain have to win, which is a really highfalutin way of saying that somehow or another America's fate's going to be decided on which of these two men is better able to capture the moron vote.
Oh, my God. Well, it's unfortunate. Some sort of poll I was looking at, I can't remember where, you know, it's really becoming a tight race again. Have you seen that poll? It's like 44 to 48 or something like that.
Yeah, yeah, I did see that.
You know, that's a bit of a worry. But then again, I think Obama only has himself to blame for that. I mean, he seems to think that running to this sort of non-existent middle is what he needs to do. I think that whole political canard is a load. I've always thought it was...
The political middle, you mean?
Yeah, I always...
Yeah, because we live in a country where the political... Where the political middle is to the right of Joseph Goebbels.
Well, that's the thing I was about to say. It's right. And if he thinks that alienating his so-called progressive base is the way to go, I think he's making a bit of a mistake.
I was wandering around over at WD40.com, Sandra, and I saw an article, and the headline says, Obama supporters on the far left cry foul. And this is not, you know, from the Communist Workers' Voice paper. This is from the New York Times. And it, let's see, what does it say? In the breathless weeks before the Oregon presidential primary in May, Martha Shade did what thousands of other people here did. She registered as a Democrat so she could vote for Senator Obama. Now, after critics have accused Mr. Obama of shifting positions on issues like the war in Iraq, the Bush administration's program of wiretapping, yada, yada, yada. Ms. Shade said she planned to switch back to the Green Party. I'm disgusted with him, she said.
Well, I thought it was really funny when Hillary decided, oh, by the way, I'm going to vote against this, you MFer. I'm sorry. I just thought, oh, she's shameless. But that was funny.
It was
very funny that she voted against the FISA, you know.
Well, yeah, and I don't buy this. I don't buy this argument that everything just felt the universe balances itself. What does Kate say that the chaos of the universe is self-correcting or something like that?
Mm.
And this was that balance because we rode Hillary Clinton, and I'm not guilty. What the hell? I just pointed it out. It's a fact. Criticized her for her vote letting George Bush slaughter the people of Iraq. And the fact that she wouldn't apologize for it or say that she was wrong about it when she clearly was wrong about it. And this is the balance to that, because now Barack Obama has earned himself some of that with the business about FISA.
Well, and also, it's amazing listening to these other left media people turning themselves inside out, trying to accommodate that blatant flip-flop. It's killing me. Who was I listening to recently? That Randy Rose. I mean, she was, you know, coming up with a new universe to explain what he did. I'm thinking, lady, back off. You sound crazy, you know?
Yeah.
It was just over the top. I'm like, no, you're not making any sense. And it was just, I mean, I wouldn't even bother explaining to see what she was saying, but it was just like, wow, the man made a mistake. Just say he did. You know, coming up with his fantasy world about how the Constitution's been restored now. I'm like, yeah, right.
In whose universe?
That's what I'm saying. It's like in another.
Because if the Constitution had been restored, I can promise you that John D. Rockefeller IV would not have been leering, and he's a tall guy, he would not have been leering over to make sure that George's signature got all the way onto the paper that was giving his, funders from the telecoms immunity.
Well, no, and the best case I've heard about it is, I think his name is Chris Hedges, who explained that, well, now the press is at risk because everyone who's your source is going to be thinking, well, your ass bugged because I'm not going to talk to you.
Oh, I know. From time to time, I get comments from listeners about this website or that website or these people are listening or those people are listening. I go on the air every night with the full realization that it's all being listened to.
Well, no, but, I mean, he makes a good point, because if you're a serious journalist and you're trying to cover a story and your source is scared of being thrown in Gitmo because they've been bugged, they're not going to tell you a thing. That's the media, the press.
Precise, and guess what?
Undermined.
That might be one of the not unintended but intended consequences of all of this.
I don't know. I find very little about this administration unintended. It all seems to be pretty, like, they're doing a pretty damn good job to me.
And so, you know, if we hated the for-profit media before, Sandra, we're really going to despise it soon.
Well, it's just
because what we thought was all Paris Hilton all the time, all Lindsay Lohan, all Britney Spears, we're going to find out that no, not by a long shot, because that's going to become all the news that there is.
Well, yeah, because the people who are supposed to watch the powerful aren't going to be able to do it. I mean, I just think that this FISA thing has tentacles that just can go in all directions. And for Obama to be on that side of it now, I don't care what these people say. I just see his position as just wrong. And his Iraq, I don't know what he's talking about on that. Did you read that article in the New York
Times? Yeah, I did.
I'm not too sure what's going on with that. I mean, I guess he stated that he still wants to remove him, right?
Yeah, it's just that I guess it's getting some qualifiers on it now. I mean, that's what's driving me nuts. Over the weekend, the worst attack in 3 years in Afghanistan.
Yeah.
Nine killed, 15 wounded. And, you know, they say 15 wounded, and there's an inclination inside the hopeful human heart to say, oh, they just winged one of them. But in this war, these occupations, you can make an argument that in many instances, wounded is worse than killed.
And not only that, but did you notice that where those people were, where the soldiers were killed and attacked, just down the road, America had, like, wiped out 47 people a few days earlier. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah, we're hell on weddings, aren't we?
Yeah, no, but it's just kind of like, what are we doing in Afghanistan, do you know?
Screwing up?
And Obama wants to focus more on that, and I was a bit scared of that aspect of his article. It's like, oh, wait a minute. So we're going to have another war president in a different war. We're going to close down the Iraq one and attack Pakistan? That's what's next?
See, that was the other movie I watched over the weekend was Gandhi. I watched Gandhi and Reds.
Oh, no.
Yeah, and you just sit there going, I'm living it. I am living this. And you take the people who started... There's a comment toward the end of Gandhi where Candace Bergen playing Margaret Burke White says, he thought he failed, speaking of Gandhi, he thought he failed. Maybe he did. Maybe Pandit Jawaharlal Nehru failed. Maybe Muhammad Jinnah failed. Because Jinnah, who is revered to this day, and they have a national holiday for him in Pakistan and everything, Sandra, He wanted a secular Muslim state. Everybody was free to be Muslim, but they were free to be Muslim mainly so that the Hindus wouldn't be killing them and they wouldn't be inclined to kill the Hindus.
And not only that, but I mean, whatever you want to say about Islam, at least it doesn't have the hierarchical nightmare that Hinduism has, which is probably why you have Pakistan today. I know it's inflammatory for me to say this, but you know what I'm saying.
Yes, I do know what you're saying. But he wanted this secular state. And he kept saying religion has no business in government. Religion has no business in government. And in the short space of 1947 to 2008, we're at a place with Pakistan, for instance, where Pervez Musharraf's head is dangling by a thread on his neck, and the people who want to come in and take power are... And this is not criticism of Islam. This is criticism of crazy fundamentalists. People want to take power, you know, who believe in things like flying horses. And, you know, not too far away, Turkey's government is now run by religious fundamentalists.
Well, they're definitely encroaching on Turkey, which is really quite disturbing since they kind of had this secular functioning state for a long time. You know?
Women were recently jailed for walking across a bridge in Turkey dressed the wrong way, Sandra.
No, so they're starting to... See, yeah, when they start, you know, re-repressing the women, you know it's all going...
These are women who were wearing a pair of perfectly respectable walking shorts and a tank top.
Oh, because it happens...
I mean, we're not talking about the Brazilian, you know, bikini... No.
Just normal Western summer wear, right?
Yeah, yeah. And so, you know, maybe look at, you know, while we're holding up the mirror, Sandra, let's hold it up to Tom Jefferson, and let's hold it up to Ben Franklin, and Adams, and the rest of that crowd, and say maybe they failed too.
Mm.
Because there was Reds last night, and so the Soviet Union failed as well, and Reed, and Emma Goldman and those types acknowledged that. That what happened, it seems like every time you start having a revolution in the name of the people, that you wind up trading one group of rich people for another.
Well, yeah, it just gets co-opted. I mean, speaking of Turkey, and wasn't that a place where Trotsky spent a bit of time trying to organize and didn't work out for him very well, but I know he was there for a minute.
And then on to Mexico City, and we know what happened down there.
That wasn't very nice.
And I love the fact, in doing some research behind the movie, I found out that Stalin suppressed 10 Days That Shook the World, which had been almost like holy writ in the new Soviet Union up until Stalin took power. And Stalin was mad because John Reed only mentioned him three times in one of those in the whole book, and one of them was just a list, while giving Lenin and Trotsky and, who was the other one? But giving the other guys the credit. And not recognizing the genius of Stalin.
Mm. Well, yeah, but he was, obviously, the revolutions can't prevent these maniac sociopaths from getting a grip of power. I mean, that seems to be what's going on here.
And I'm seeing some babbling out there that it's possible that the United States is actually letting the Israeli... And I don't know the truth of it, okay? But the United States is actually letting the Israeli Air Force do some practicing from Iraqi air bases?
Well, yeah, I heard that, too. Then I heard them saying they're not letting them, they won't let them use airspace. You know, it seems to be some sort of mixed signals coming out. I'm sure it's just propaganda for our consumption. I really don't know. I keep waiting to wake up to some sort of, oh, they've attacked, you know, Iran. And I don't know why they let those missiles off, that whole business.
Sometimes it seems like they're working together.
That's what I mean. It's all like.
And if you ask Greg Palast, he'll say sure they are, because oil prices were plummeting, so it's time to test some missiles and jack the price of oil back up. Bushes get rich, the Iranian state oil company gets richer, the Saudis do well, the Kuwaitis do well, everybody does well, as long as we stand on the brink. Remember the Cold War, Sandra, was very, very good for business.
Oh yeah. And half the enemy was, you know, some made-up crap anyway. It didn't even exist.
Right. You know, what was it? The CIA estimated as far back as 1972 that the Soviet Union could not pose a credible risk.
But that's why, yeah. And Donald Rumsfeld played a big part in ginning that up, just like he did, with this war in Iraq. I mean, these people never go away. But, you know, all empires come to an end. I don't know what's going on with the U.S., but it's an interesting time.
And that, oddly enough, is a curse, isn't it, Sandra? May you live in interesting times.
Yeah, that's why I said it like that. I'm like, you know, I don't want to be living in interesting times. You know what I'm saying?
No, I want to be just deadly dull, bored.
Real dull.
Yeah, you get up, go to work, get paid a fair wage, you know, have all of America doing that, having health care, and... Not sitting there on the edge of their seat waiting for the other shoe to drop.
I want to have daydreams about what my little nieces are going to be doing 20 years from now. You see what I'm saying?
I know stuff like that. Exactly.
But anyway, listen, I'll let you go.
Sandra, it was just great fun to get the week started this way.
Yeah, well, I'm going to listen to the show. So
all right, and I'll play the parody here in a little bit, the song parody, but again, it's at YouTube as well. If you just look up Troy King or I'm Troy King and I'll Blow, you'll get
it. Okay, I definitely will look that up.
And I think the thing's had like 2,000-3,000 views by now, which is...
Oh, excellent. Okay.
Yeah, Very cool. Thanks, Sandra. Take care.
Bye-bye.
Bye now. That's our pal Sandra out in California. And let's keep it rolling. Hi, welcome to the program.
Hello?
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 Yeah.
Oh, hi.
Hi.
I didn't realize I was calling in on the program. I'm sorry.
Oh, okay. Oh, yes. Yeah, I know who this is.
I bet you do.
It took me about a half a tick. I'm terribly, yeah. Happy anniversary.
Thank you. Are we talking politics?
Oh, we're talking, yeah, a little bit of everything.
A little bit of everything.
Yeah, a little politics, the New Yorker cover, whether we're going to light up Tehran, that kind of thing. Yeah.
Okay, well, here's what I want to know.
Okay.
This goes back to last week and the fact that Mr. McCain was unaware of even the fact that our exports to Iran are up. And it seems to me like a man who's willing to go to war with somebody ought to kind of know that sort of thing, don't you think?
There's a lot of things I'd like for that man to know, or at least to know why he doesn't know them, because he's not the sharpest knife in the drawer. I mean, you got to remember, this guy was 894th out of 899 in his graduating class at Annapolis. 894th out of 899, and it wasn't alphabetical order or anything. That's actually a lower graduation position than George Bush had when he went to Yale. It's entirely possible that John McCain might be duller than George Bush, and that just sort of scares the daylights out of me.
Yes, me as well, honey. Me as well.
Y'all doing all right?
We're doing great. Yes, we are.
And I've been terribly remiss in not calling in a while, but I got up, and you guys' anniversary never goes by, but I mark it. And
well, I had to tell you, we were like so excited to hear from you because we have no numbers. So it's like, okay, I don't know where this is, but I'm calling it.
Well, I'm so glad you did, and maybe we'll get to yak a little bit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Give us a call when you get off the air.
Okay, we'll do. All right. Talk to you later.
All right. Bye.
Bye. Some dear friends of mine celebrating their wedding anniversary today, and you know, when you get married on Bastille Day, it's hard to look at the calendar and go, "Oh, something, yeah, else beside, yeah, right." So that's how that goes. Ah, doggone it. Whoever was on the other line is gone now. So, you know, that's a pretty good idea of where we're getting started this evening. And, yeah, I'm guilty. I laughed at, and you heard Sandra. It's kind of, and that was the name I was trying to remember. They put Angela Davis's hair on Michelle Obama on the New Yorker cover. And yeah, I'm told in an email that there has run an interview with the New Yorker managing editor, who said it was okay to run it's a caricature. That's what it is. It's a caricature. And apparently on National People's Radio, he said, you got to really have the voice to do this. He said, anyone with an understanding of satire gets this, and that's plenty of America. Why are those that get this saying it doesn't bother them, but this won't be understood by someone else? And here's the part where I start having fun, and here's the part where my West Virginia listening audience, that portion thereof, gets to go outside and throw something. Now, they may not get it in West Virginia or somewhere in the Midwest, but we think most of America will see this as satire. Really? Really? I got newsflash for the managing editor or the main editor, the head honcho, whatever his name is, there at the New Yorker. He needs to get out a little bit more. I realize that traveling out into flyover country might be might feel just a little bit like slumming to him. But he really does need to get out a little bit more, because there are... that's an editorial... What that is an editorial cartoon. It really is. And if you saw it on the editorial pages, it would make sense. But for a magazine that frequently runs little pastel watercolors of the view of the Essex House from Central Park, I understand the Essex House is no longer there, whatever, you know, with little dappled watercolor leaves and stuff like that, then to turn around and do a caricature like this and then say, well, you know, they may not get it in West Virginia because, you know, those people are so, oh, God, they're just stunningly stupid in West Virginia. See, that's me tapping my little fingers on the desktop here, because I just got done watching Gandhi, and I'm nonviolent. Nah, see, when I hear comments like that, I want to fly to New York and push that guy's teeth down his face, but that's me. Because arguably the New Yorker favors the election of Barack Obama. And there's no getting around the fact that this makes it worse in places that Obama needs to carry, like West Virginia. You know, Obama wants to be the new Kennedy, remember? I mean, that's why he's going to give a speech at the Brandenburg Gate, for heaven's sakes. And one of the things that made Kennedy's 1960 presidential campaign, what gave it the impetus to go forward, was his ability to go into places like Mingo County and McDowell County and Logan County and Boone County in West Virginia and convince some fairly provincial folks that it would be okay to have a Catholic be president. The same thing applies now. And you can make the argument that the New Yorker has made it decidedly more difficult for him to do that. And like I said, I understand that this was just, you know, it's the issue of the day. I got other issues, much more serious issues, and one that's not so serious but has a rather serious underpinning, if you will. And there they are, the statistics from World Nut Daily. The image isn't too far from the dangerous truth about the Obama family. 60%! And then there's the 11% who say, funny, because there is some truth in it. So, 71% have had their pre-existing, preformed, unassailable opinions. What? Yes, validated by one of the most liberal magazines in the country. Oh, and David writes in from South Carolina with regard to the editor's comment that you know, we feel quite certain that they'll get this. We think most of America will see this as satire. David in South Carolina writes in real quick and says, Bob, they don't do satire in South Carolina. No. And they don't do it in Busted Knuckle, Mississippi either. And they don't do it down in the pit at the Jiffy Lube or in the Inner Sanctum insurance agent's office in Arkansas. No, they really, really... You want proof that they don't do satire in Arkansas? I mentioned this on the horn section the other night. And I'm going to the phones right here in just a second. It appears that Sacha Baron Cohen is up to his old tricks again. And they are fun little tricks. And for those of us who are elitists, even hillbilly elitists, we can snicker up our sleeves a little bit. Because they rented out they're not saying it was Sacha Baron Cohen, but the refusal to acknowledge that it was Sacha Baron Cohen kind of says it's Sacha Baron, because he's in production for a movie about the character he created on the Ali G show named, what was it, Gunter? Who is a really, really over-the-top fashion reporter or some such. You know, really, really out. There's video of him from the Ali G show interviewing a wonderful tailback from the University of Alabama's football team named Shaud Williams. And he says, so tell me, how does it feel for you to know that there are so many gay men in Austria who find your table sexy? And bless his heart, Shaud Williams had not been let in on the gag, and he just looks up and goes, I am not gay! So, apparently, Sacha Baron Cohen staged this event in Arkansas where they offered cheap admission and dollar beer for people to come to the city wrestling arena or wherever they hold this stuff. And they promised a steel cage match. And so a guy started goading a plant in the audience into coming in and fighting him in the steel cage. And the guy comes roaring out of the audience and gets in the steel cage, and the two guys then just rip their clothes off and rub all over each other. And they were outraged in Arkansas. Outraged. We come here for some fighting and wrestling in a steel cage match. Instead, we got all of this here. Oh, my God, I don't even want to talk about it. So, no, what David in South Carolina says is true, and it's true about a lot of this country. They don't do satire. And there are a whole bunch of people who, even if you stamped it with that big red government stamp, satire, wouldn't get it. And a lot of those people, a significant percentage of that significant percentage, wouldn't get it because they don't want to. They want their bigoted stereotypes reinforced. They don't want them challenged. That's why they're in their little right-wing fundy churches every time the door opens. They don't want their preconceived beliefs, not knowledge, not facts, beliefs, challenged. That's why they run around with their little bumper stickers on the back of the car that say, God said it, I believe it, that settles it. See? You know, if I was still a drinking man, I'd think about getting up to New York and just finding out where the watering hole, where that New York Times editor hangs out is, and just, hey, dumbass, come here a minute. Let me straighten you up for a sec. But I'm just a loudmouth on the inner tubes. We'll go to the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
Good evening.
Hey, David, what's up?
Well, I just wanted to give you my report on the Blues Festival.
Did you go?
Yes, I went. But I don't think you're going to like what I have to say, Bob, because it does point to the times that we live in.
Tell me the music sucked.
No. The music was all right, but it was misleading because they said Roger Wilson would perform. But what they didn't say was they didn't give Roger Wilson a set. They gave him intermission music with the music considerably lower so people could go to the concession stands and buy their crab, French fries, barbecue chicken, and look at U.S. cellular technology.
Ah.
Yeah, so I was a little bit what I heard was good, but, again, it had to deal with the fact that they didn't focus their energy on him, and it didn't make sense why they didn't give him a set, because they could have put him on at 10:30 when airplanes were going by. We had antique airplanes in the sky, or they could have put him on before then. But I guess his whole deal was he was to do just intermission music for the whole festival.
But did he do it well?
I'd say he did it well, but the point is, Bob, is that the volume... And when you have the people who aren't paying attention to it, it's because he wasn't on the, I have to point it out to you, he wasn't on the main stage. And when I say, like, the volume was low, I mean,
You mean it was non-existent?
It was there, but I mean, again, it was in the background. They made him into background music, basically.
Oh, for heaven's sakes, what a pity.
Roger
deserves a hell of a lot better than that.
I know. I think what it has to do with is a lot of the blues gatekeepers, a lot of probably the labels, the ones that are really good with the radio stations, and the ones that aren't good with the radio stations, they're not going to get that set. And even if they're virtuosos, even if they're that great, it all has to deal with, if you're on Alligator Records and so-and-so Records, well, you guys get top billing. But everyone else, who are you again? Oh, yeah, you can get the intermission or whatever.
Well, darn shame.
But he did do good. I'll give him that. And the problem was that people did not notice it because, again, they thought, well, this is intermission, and I'm going to go get me some food.
How was the food?
Yeah, the food was good. I mean, you can't complain. It's Rockland. So,
I'm surprised. So it's close enough people could have just about been dipping their lobsters out of the water themselves.
Yeah, I would say so. I mean, the festival, I think, has changed a little bit when you have a sponsor like USS Cellular coming in every after every act trying to hype up the crowd to buy some more cellular phone gadgets. But, I mean, I thought it was good, and the cool thing about it was they broadcasted it on the radio for 2 days straight on the radio station, the whole festival. And,
oh, wow.
But here, once again, Roger gets the shaft because during the commercials, they would play the commercials over Roger. See, so
yeah.
You can't win. You can't win on something like that. But I guess the cool thing about it was he did get a profile, and some people saw him, and maybe he did sell. I don't know how many CDs he would have sold on something like that, but I don't think it hurt him, let's put it that way. And he got to do the whole festival, so.
Well, I so admire his dedication to his craft, David, because, I mean, we went through the schedule the other night, and the guy just burns up the roads.
Yeah, I agree. The one person who really stood out that I heard was, a woman that I hadn't heard of because I do not listen to, radio primarily. And I don't pay attention to blues magazines, but there's this woman named Ruthie Wilson. Amazing. In so many words, amazing. She tore the house down.
Vocalist, player, I mean.
She's acoustic player. I guess the thing that really got her attention is she did a revision of Maya Angelou's poem, Phenomenal Woman. And she put music to it.
Oh, wow.
Amazing voice. I would look out for that. Maybe I'll send you the song so you can play it during the
I'd love to hear it, yeah.
Or something.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I'm really impressed by Ruthie. I was really impressed by Ruthie Wilson, and her band is pretty top-notch as well. So they really understand that. The other thing that I wanted to bring attention to was something I caught on the Randy Rhoads Show, and I think a lot of people will be interested in this. This happened, I believe, on this weekend. The answer, this is the headline, 8,000-mile walk for Native American rights, environmental protection, and to stop global warming. See, Bob, nobody's been talking about this, but listen to this. The answer to one of the biggest questions in Washington, D.C. has been manifesting for over 5 months and more than 8,000 miles that span across the sacred grounds of living sovereign nations. The question, what steps can be taken to make known that all life is sacred and save Mother Earth? 175 days, people, 175 days. 4,200 hours ago, walkers from all over the Indian country as well as international allies embarked on a journey that carried them through rain, snow, and even a tornado. Two paths were taken to make the journey, both a northern and southern route, in order to bring awareness to and address environmental and sacred sites protection, cultural survival, youth empowerment, and Native American rights. thousands of walkers, which included, now this is going to make a lot of people feel bad, which included newborn babies and elders in their 90s, representing more than 100 nations, joined the walk along the way. The Navajo, the Hopi, the Apache, the Havasupe, the Tanuki, the Anishinaabe, the Wintun, the Wallapai, the Lakota, the Six Nations, the Ute, the Washo, and many others, as well as representatives from New Zealand, Germany, Japan, Italy, and Holland. Paula compromised the diverse walk. As they walked, they picked up more than 8,000 bags of trash on the road they traveled. I think that's amazing. I think everyone else should look at that as inspiring.
That's stunning.
And I'm going to tell you something, Bob, that kind of makes me sick. Why didn't Huffington Post cover this? Why didn't anyone else cover this? You know, when I listened to the guy on the radio, he was really hurt. He was a Native American, and he was explaining the trek that they made, how many hours it took, the hardships they did. And Randy let him talk, even in during, I have to give this up to Randy. She let him talk even when the music was blaring, when it was going to cut for commercial, till he had everything he had to say, because he was heated a little bit, and he wanted people to know what they did for this country. And you know, Bob, I think bringing attention to this, maybe they could have had a publicist who fielded to all of the progressive radio stations. Maybe they didn't do that, but I think we can redeem something like that by having a guy from going to the Long Walk website and maybe getting in touch with them and doing a profile or an interview for them and giving them their just due, because this, to me, is as important as the 1 Million Man March, without a doubt. It's important as any of these marches. And the fact that we didn't give any due to these people, the Native Americans across our land, the people that flew over, let me say this again, people, 90-year-old elders and babies were walking alongside these people, over 8,000 people, 5 months. Don't ever say you can't do it.
And that's the kicker on all of this. It can be done. There's all kinds of stuff that can be done. I mean, like I said, talking with Sandra, it's easy to look up and go, you know, we're screwed, and you know, we're rearranging deck chairs on the Titanic until we start really getting serious about addressing the real problems of this nation. But it is possible for individual action to make individual differences that have a wider scale than the scope of the individual action itself. And all I can say is, you know, I wish I'd known about this guy. That's as much a failing of mine to find this stuff as it is, you know.
I think the failing is a lot of these progressive sites, when they get past something, they need to be a little bit more because we can't cover everywhere. And also, I guess in Jeff Farias, they might have mentioned it once or something. But I guess with something like this, I think someone should take the time to put banners some places, whether it's a liberal talk radio blog or field to those people. Or they should have reached out to Huffington Post and just different areas, Mother Jones.
But you're also identifying something, David, and what you're identifying is the cliquishness of the left.
Oh, yeah.
If you want to call us the left. The center, the left, like I said, I'm not exactly out there calling for the dictatorship of the proletariat, if you know what I mean.
Right.
But there is a cliquishness to it. And it's a cliquishness that extends to funding. It's a cliquishness that extends to publication. It's a cliquishness that extends to what causes will be deemed significant enough. And there is there are iron gates on those doors, David. I kid you not.
Oh, I agree with you, Bob. And I think one of the reasons why a lot of progressive media wouldn't cover something like this. And like I was telling you people, guy on the radio was obviously hurt. Said for 5 months we tried to reach out to people, nothing. And you could tell it in his voice. He goes, but we still walked. We still did what we had to do. And he goes, we're Native Americans and we're going to be here. We're going to be here forever. And he basically pointed out that he said, we don't care if we didn't get any press. We had to do what we had to do to show people around the world
And that's the other half of the equation. If you're doing it for press, you're doing it for the wrong reason.
Yeah.
But on the other hand, if you're doing it for the right reasons and you can't get any press, then you get a pretty good idea of where the heart and soul of a lot of people is or are. So, yeah, it's very, very frustrating. You know, one of the things that motivates, and, you know, of course, I can always turn it around and talk about us or whatever. One of the things that frustrates me and those of us associated with the Horn, David, is that we have this sickening feeling that if at some point everything dries up and we just have to go dark and it's over, that a month later one of us is going to be surfing along and find out that some well-connected, well-heeled, properly, you know, knows which fork to eat, used to eat the shrimp, the limousine liberal, declares that he's just invented conversation radio, and he's going to create a new paradigm for liberal talk on the internet. And then all of us at the Horn are just going to have to, I don't know, we'll get a hot tub that can accommodate 15 or 20 people, and we'll all do the warm bath and razor blade thing together because it'll drive us batty.
Well, you know, Bob, I'll write that letter that T-Bone Pickens asking for a few million. Because you know, Bob, he does believe in windmill technology.
Yes, he does. Yes, he does.
And I just want to say one thing about...
You know why? Because windmills spin, and there's a lot of spin in that.
Yeah, I know. I just want to say one thing about they were meeting with a U.S. Representative John Conyers. I just have one thing to say, dude. Every time John Conyers did he even mention this in public? I don't even remember him saying anything like this, that he's going to meet a representative of the Native American for what they call Longest Walk. You guys go to longestwalk.org and check it out. And Bob, I really would encourage you to give these people their due for this walk and to get representatives.
I'm going to go to the website. I'm going to look at it and see about getting somebody on the show. I will do that as soon as the show's over.
Thank you very much.
All right, David, take care. I'm sorry the concert didn't work out the way it did, but next.
I had fun, Bob, and that's the important thing is people got to keep their traditions alive via the blues, and Texas representative, Mississippi representative, and a lot of people.
Roger's a Georgia boy, so.
Oh yeah, and Roger, he represented it for what he could do with the time that he had, and but the person that was a diamond was Ruthie Wilson.
I'm gonna check her out. I bet she's got a MySpace page. I'll go find it.
Well, I'll talk to you later, Bob.
All right, take care, David. Good to hear from you. Bye now. Darn the luck. Roger deserves better than that. Because when he lights up, man, he lights up. And so, it's about 12 minutes after 7. We're a little late for the hour or two break, but what the heck. We'll go ahead and take it anyway. You're listening to America's Liberal Voice, America's listener-supported Liberal Voice. This is The Horn. We'll be back. We'll be right back.
Your second hour in the Liberal Sandbox, and you're head on with Bob Kincaid.
You betcha, by golly, wow, 17 minutes past the hour. Monday edition of Head On. Okay, maybe make... By the way, I shoot my big mouth off, talking all tough guy. What do I get in my email? Bob, here's the address of where the guy goes drinking in New York. Oh, if only I had a plane ticket. You know, this hillbilly elitist accosted me in a bar the other night. There I was, drinking my Shirley Temple. This big pink guy came up and started telling me about how I needed to spend some more time in flyover country. Oh... Wood for a plane ticket. Let's see. Where do you want to go for the next hour and 45 minutes or so? Hour and 40 minutes. You're welcome to take the show where you want it to go, because, you know, that's how things work around here. I promised that I would. Yeah, and this is kind of a debut. We officially debuted it the other night on the horn section. That would be Thursday. But The Troy King, Attorney General in the closet, I guess he'd be a log closet kind of guy, being how he's a Republican and all, isn't going away, as evidenced by the fact that the John McCain people scrubbed him from their website. Let no longer the name of Troy King be spoken in the John McCain campaign, just like something out of Cecil B. DeMille. So, this is, like I said, the video version, and our moderator and news ninja, ELO, put the video together and did so brilliantly. The videos for both Pastor from Montgomery, I think it was up over 5,000 views at YouTube. This is up over a couple of thousand views. This is just the audio. This is just the song. The silly little lyric that came to me in about 15 minutes. When these things hit, they write themselves. And then John turned it around in lickety-split record time, too. And, well, you'll recognize it. Because what it boils down to is Troy King, the upright, God-fearing, church-going Attorney General of Alabama, who is waging a personal jihad against sex toys, is said to have been caught getting it on with a guy by his wife and mother of his three children. Two of his three children, and I'm not trying to take this over the line, two of his three children are named Colden and Asher. And I feel sorry for them, but again, let's get it straight a bit. Well, straight's probably not the word to use. Let's square this up a little bit. Well, no, he's not very square either under the circumstances. Let's try and see if we can make some sense out of this. There's all this talk. There was even one justification for Troy King not addressing all this smoke where there's most assuredly some tinder kindling by saying, well, you know, I'm very close to Troy, and Troy said he didn't want his children going to school and having to answer all these questions and hearing these nasty things said about their daddy. And there's only one problem with that, and Loretta Knoll, our buddy, pointed it out quite succinctly, and that is, in Alabama, as is the case in most of the United States, school's out right now and has been for several weeks and won't come back into session for several more. Oopsie. Yeah, bless. Where do these people get these names? They named two of their kids Coldman Asher, and I'm sorry, but I can't help but think that there's some Freudian stuff going on there. Troy King thinking, it's going to take anywhere between 1 and 12 Coldens to get me through this. Or, I sure wish I didn't have to go to bed with this here woman to make people think I ain't gay. Bang, Coldman Asher. That's about as me. Yeah. So, anyway, John Fox did his usual magnificent job producing this tune. And the lyrics are what the lyrics are, and he brings them to life. So, if you haven't seen the video over at YouTube, I encourage you to. And even if you, well, for the, yeah, this is just the debut. Sorry, I don't have any fanfares or drum rolls or anything, but we're working on it. The official Troy King parody song as produced and performed by John Fox of the Horn.
Tales to sail of events, I'll let you use me till you're spent. No gall, no shame, no regrets, I'll even light your cigarettes. Ah, but 2 hours of homosexual smuts keeps my closet door tightly shut. I'm a my views are wrong with gay hookers I have found. I'm short but not too big around. I'm a hypocrite by all means. I'm Troy King and I'll blow. I know every man whore in every bar and all of their buddies both near and far, and every hand job and every town. Shocked, I vows I'd mock when no one's around to see. My tales for sale or rent, I'll let you use me to your spent. No gall, no shame, no regrets, I'll even light your cigarettes. Ah, but 2 hours of homosexual smuts keeps my closet door shut. I'm a
don't forget to tip your waitress. He'll be here all week. Ladies and gentlemen, the magnificent John Fox. Oh, that's... They just keep getting better. They just keep getting better. So, Lord only knows where the lightning will strike next. All right, moving on. 25 minutes past the hour. And just, okay, the question was posed by our buddy, my buddy who called in a little bit ago. Wouldn't you expect John McCain to be a little bit more knowledgeable? Well, this goes into the John McCain crazy old coot file. John McCain, who can't work the internet, and he says he's working on being able to get online and hopes to be able to do that real soon. See, you know, I just got to scratch my head a little bit about something like that. I mean, the whole idea of the operating systems now, and any, you know, you're all listening through a computer, God knows, or by you picked it up maybe in delay or whatever, and downloaded it to your iPod, your MP3 player, whatever. And it's not exactly rocket science to, you know, there's a little thing, and you go clickety-clickety, and everything happens, and it's the keyboard's just like a typewriter, and you can even use one or two fingers. And you put dot and com, and you hit the enter button, which used to be the return back when John McCain was using a typewriter, if he ever learned how, and boom, everything happens. But no, he doesn't know how to use the inner tubes. And now, as of today, during a press availability, John McCain was trying to prove his foreign policy bona fides, because remember, that's how he's being pitched to America. John McCain can be trusted on national security. No. He did this press availability today, and he says, "My friends, I've been concerned by a couple of steps that the Russian government took in the last several days, especially where it concerns reducing the energy supplies to Czechoslovakia." Oh, mother. I should think the Russians probably would have reduced energy supplies to Czechoslovakia, in light of the fact that Czechoslovakia hasn't existed for 15 years! Moron. God, I'm tired of morons in the Oval Office. I'm tired of doddering old idiots. I'm tired of the Ronald Reagans. Sick to death of the George H.W. Bushes and the vision thing. And what the hell is it? What is that? And you just run the thing across the little glass plate and it tells you what price it is. And that's amazing. And George Bush and his gentleman C's at Yale. And the back rubs. And all the verbal miscues. And the flipping the bird at the camera and the video of him picking his nose and then pulling it out and having a good look at it. Wonder if it's crunchy. I'm sick of that. And now, what, according to some of the polls, there's a 3-point difference between a guy who graduated 894th out of 899 in his class at Annapolis and the guy who was a superior graduate of Harvard Law School. There's a 3-point difference between the, oh, mercy. At reducing the energy supplies to Czechoslovakia, my friends. And we're just supposed to write that off, I guess. Well, yeah. And, I mean, how at this rate, how long until he refers to Thailand as Siam? I just got, my friends, I just got done watching a documentary about Siam, and apparently their king shaves his head and wears those pants like, who was that hip cat rock and roll star from a few years ago that said I couldn't touch anything? Fascinating place, Siam. I hope they don't cut off the energy supplies to Siam too, like they did to Czechoslovakia. Oh! And, this isn't the first time. About 3 months ago, talking to Don Imus, why he was on Imus, I don't know, but those two probably get along really well. He made a reference to Czechoslovakia then, too. And then he was in a debate in 2007, October. What, about 9 months ago? And said that America needs to, my friends, America needs a missile defense system in place in Czechoslovakia and Poland. Jesus, John, don't forget the Sudetenland! Now, you can sort of go at this one of two ways. You can take the approach that the president is only a figurehead and that most of the real heavy lifting gets done by his advisors, and he's just there to kiss hands and shake babies and greet the little league teams when they show up and that kind of stuff, and go out and make vaguely satisfactory speeches in the Rose Garden and show up and not get caught picking his nose on tape. Or you can take the view that the presidency of the United States is a very serious job that should be defined and had by very serious people, man or woman, black or white, okay? Race is not part, nor gender, of the job description. Well, we've seen in the course of Ronald Reagan, George H.W. Bush, and George W. Bush how America handles the so-called figurehead presidency. And whether George Will, who should be strangled with his own bow tie, just kidding, whether George Will realizes it or not, America is in a recession. America is in something that is darn near approaching a depression. If we remember the words of Harry Truman, when it's happening to your neighbor, it's a recession. When it's happening to you, it's a depression. There's a lot more foreclosures coming down the pike. That means homeless people, ruined people. These things do have consequences. And there's only a 3-point split right now between the John Forrest Fire McCain and Barack Obama. And I'm concerned about Russia reducing the energy supplies to Czechoslovakia. But that's not where it ends, and it's not just garden variety stupidity either. There's ever so much more to it than all of that. Because John McCain is not just willing or unwilling or negligently able to make dumb, moronic, empty-headed, you know, fluff-brained things like, you know, Czechoslovakia. Because I'm thinking that the Slovaks and the Czechs, who were forced together under, yeah, that they're kind of happy to be the Czech Republic and Slovakia, and never the twain shall meet again. I mean, they're not warring with each other over the border or anything. Everybody's happy. But everybody just went back to where they felt like they belonged in the first place. And to have the guy who wants to be the president not even vaguely, two in a row that aren't even vaguely aware of a 21st century map of Earth? I mean, that's what we're talking about. That's the big picture. Not vaguely familiar with a 21st century map of Earth. Whoa. About once a year, a story comes down talking about America's eighth graders, according to the National Geographic Society and the American Geographic Survey, are unable to locate Topeka, Kansas on a map. And a spokesman comes out and talks about how important it is that we, and I agree with every last bit of it. But they're not teaching it in schools, because, you know, memorization's bad. No, memorization good. Stretches the brain. Now, I don't want you to just think history's nothing but a bland litany of dates and places and names. Well, if history's not some sort of a litany of places and dates and names, what the hell is history? And geography's not just a bland litany of places and names. Yes, it is! But it's not bland. It's exciting if you've got it. Oh, Jesus, I'm going to where I don't got any place business going. But it's not just this. It's not just Czechoslovakia. It's not just George Bush 8 years ago being asked if he could name the head man in Pakistan, and he said, yeah, his name's General something. Hell, that's the first name of half of the countries that half of the right wing dictatorships that the United States has this ugly habit of supporting. General something. And I think it's General So. I had to, he makes some very fine chicken. I like it. I don't like it as spicy as they serve it. I have them make it mild for me. My tummy can't do it. That's not all there is. Do you remember the 6-week-long newsgasm that we had here in the United States a few months back about Hillary Clinton and a remark that she made regarding a trip that she made to Bosnia? I didn't say a hell of a lot about it because I thought it was a tempest in a teapot and it really didn't go to anything particularly legitimate with regard to her campaign. But that put me in a distinct minority because whether it was Huffington Post or most of the so-called liberal websites, everybody, and God knows the right-wing website was about to melt down in full, you know, in full monkey mode. Hillary Clinton proves she is a serial liar. She said she was under sniper fire in Bosnia when she wasn't. And it just made me think that even the so-called liberal blogosphere had suddenly lost the ability to talk about anything that mattered. Well, we've got another one of those. Only, here's the interesting part. This time it's not Hillary Clinton. This time, it's not even Barack Obama. Because, you know, the right wing runs around saying, well, Barack Obama, he's setting up campaign operations in all 57 states. Any one of these little, because he made a verbal gaffe about 57 states or something like that. I don't know. I try to avoid the right-wing blogosphere as much as possible. But to the anybody who's ever listened to a rock and roll band member who has toured extensively, they'll begin to tell you about how everything starts to look the same, and you wind up, you know, it's the parody out of the beautiful comedy out of the Spinal Tap. This is Spinal Tap. When David St. Hubbins or whoever walks on stage, and I forget what city it is, but it ain't Cleveland, and he says, "Hello, Cleveland!" That happens to anybody who is dragged from place to place, and it's not just rock and roll, and it's not just baseball players or basketball players or hockey players or football players who travel constantly, or their umpires or referees. It's politicians, too. And it does, even with a vibrant, energetic, youngish man like Barack Obama, it'll tell on you, and every now and then you'll say 57 states. And you're just glad you didn't say hello, Cleveland. And it happened to McCain. He went down to Wake Forest University and thanked all the good people of West Virginia for inviting him to come and speak there. Woo! But this one is still, even so, a little more serious. John McCain had an appearance in Pennsylvania recently, and I would have to think it was somewhere between central Pennsylvania or west, because the further east you go, the more Jets, Giants, and Eagles fans you get. But he was talking about his POW experience, which he says, "My friends, those were difficult times, and I don't want to talk about them. Now, let me tell you about the time that I was patriotic in the Hanoi Hilton." So McCain was in Pittsburgh. Yeah, okay, there it is. He was in Pittsburgh. And this story's a little bit older, a few days old, but I'm not seeing the outrage. I'm not seeing the flack over Bosnia outrage that was generated toward Hillary Clinton over this. John McCain's in Pittsburgh. And Pittsburgh is, if any place on earth is, that doesn't happen to be named Green Bay, Wisconsin. Pittsburgh is an NFL town. I'll never forget the first time that I heard Myron Cope on sports. Don't be brisket. And the terrible towel and all of that stuff. And the immaculate reception. And long before... for those of you who hate my geeky sports diatribes, you can just come back in about 5 minutes and maybe I'll be done. For a long, long time, before there was any Franco Harris or Rocky Blyer, before there was Terry Bradshaw and Lynn Swann in the huddles, and Lynn saying, Coach Knoll sent this play in, and Terry looks at Lynn and just says, go deep, and Lynn says to Terry, I'll be open, and everyone, ooh. Before there was a Stallworth, before Jack Lambert, before there were ever people in Pittsburgh wandering, walking the city, Forbes Avenue and so forth, and one for the thumb! One for the thumb! Talking about wanting that fifth Super Bowl ring. Before any of that ever happened, it was a little NFL franchise owned by Art Rooney and the Rooney family, and they sucked. They were terrible. I mean, they weren't just bad. I mean, they were Arizona Cardinals terrible, okay? That bad. For that long. Just bad. But Pittsburgh loved their Steelers. I'm sorry, Steelers. Can't say Steelers when you're talking about Pittsburgh. It's Steelers. Pittsburgh loved their Steelers. And were loyal to them. And so John McCain's in Pittsburgh. And John McCain tells people, after telling them how much he hates to talk about and he doesn't want to exploit his time as a prisoner of war, proceeds to tell them a prisoner of war story. And he says, my friends, when I was first interrogated and really had to give some information, I named the starting lineup defensive line of the Pittsburgh Steelers as my squadron mates. Really. I would hazard a guess that among the most loyal Pittsburgh Steelers fans, there aren't that many who then or now could name the starting defensive line of the 1967 Steelers. The 1967 Steelers, among other things, sports fans, for those of you keeping score at home, were 4-9-1. That's 4 wins, 9 losses, and 1 tie. We all remember what Bear Bryant said about ties. They're like kissing your sister. They were 4-9-1. This is before the overtime period where you get close enough to kick a field goal, and if you win's right, you win the game even if you didn't have any business winning it. The 1967 Steelers, including their, shall we say, porous defensive line, were 4-9-1. They were not, they were the original manifestation of the no-name defense later hung on the Miami Dolphins. The difference was that the 1967 Pittsburgh Steelers really earned the name, or lack thereof. The no-named 4-9-1. So there you are. You've just been shot down because you are one of the most incompetent pilots in the United States Navy. You have been shot out of the sky and you have crashed multi-million dollar aircraft number 5. One for the thumb! And you are now a prisoner of war. And you are being subjected to interrogation. And you're not feeling very well because, in addition to being an incompetent pilot, you're not very competent at using the whole ejector seat thingy, even though you've had 4 other planes worth of practice. And you wrecked your shoulders and your arms getting blown out of, through the plane via the ejection seat. Kind of reminds me of those Beverly Hillbillies episodes when Jethro Bodine was a double knot spy. Nut, nut. No, that's not knot, you dumb old girl cousin. And he'd try to use the ejection seat there in the Clampett family truck. And it's about the same speed with John McCain. Not very competent. Not very smart. A little bit dim, frankly. They would never have put him in an aircraft seat had he not been the son and grandson of admirals. Oh, I guess we got to let him fly the airplanes. Anyway, hey, Admiral, ain't we got an old Brewster Buffalo around here we can put him in or something? No, no, just don't let him in one of the fighters. Don't put him near one of the Phantoms or anything. They put him in one of those attack bombers. Okay, so we're not going to let him fly combat air patrol over the aircraft carriers, right, Admiral? Oh, no, no. What, do I look like crazy? So he's getting interrogated, and he's not feeling very good, and he has to give name names, or because they're torturing him. Or, as the commandant of the Hanoi Hilton has recently noted, they weren't torturing him. And when I was first interrogated, and I really had to give some information, because John McCain can't say that he was tortured outright, not on the campaign trail, because then there might be some of those ugly questions about why he voted to support torture. And the story about that a little bit, too. Enough of me babbling. Here, hang on just a minute. Let's get it straight from the jackass's mouth, as the saying goes. Here we go.
Senator John McCain continued his campaign visit to the area today. The senator was in the South Hills, where he toured Consols Energy's research lab in South Park. He told the employees their technology could one day help the U.S. become less dependent on foreign oil.
Oh, by the way, Consol Energy? Yeah, they drill for oil, right? Or they're natural? No. Big bunch of coal whores. John McCain was touring a coal whore facility when he put his foot in it like this. But, you know.
Oil. But Senator McCain's visit to the area wasn't all business. He also made some time for something that is synonymous with Pittsburgh. Senator McCain can add a Steelers jersey to his closet full of presidential suits and ties. Consol Energy presented McCain with a special jersey that displayed the legendary steel curtain on the back. And afterwards, McCain and his wife sat down for an interview with KD political editor John Delano. So when McCain thinks of Pittsburgh, the first thing that comes to mind?
The Steelers.
You know how some people, when they're lying through their filthy teeth, they'll kind of chuckle? The Steelers.
Because I was a mediocre high school athlete, and I loved and adored the sports, but the Steelers really made a huge impression on me.
Math time! When I was a high schooler in sports, now let's see, I got to do this on the fly, so I'm liable to screw this up, so bear with me. John McCain is 71 years old. If he is elected president, he will be older when he takes the oath of office than Ronald Reagan was, and we all saw how that worked out. Aunt Mommy, ketchup is a vegetable. 1937. He's born 1937, if I got that right. So he's a high schooler in 1955. He is not a Pittsburgher, okay? If you were a big-time NFL fan in 1955, come on, work with me here. Who are you a big fan of? The Giants? Yeah. That. The Steelers? Not so much. I mean, that would be when he was, okay, so call it 53, 52. The Steelers did have a great Hall of Fame quarterback back then, but Please tell me that the diehard Steeler fans of Western Pennsylvania, Northern West Virginia, Eastern Ohio, please tell me they're savvy enough to realize that they're being lied to. But never mind, let's continue.
Kane says the Steelers were also on his mind during the 6 years that he was held as a prisoner of war in North Vietnam.
When I was first interrogated and really had to give some information because of the pressures, that the physical pressures that were on me, I named the starting lineup, defensive line of the Pittsburgh Steelers as my squadron mates.
McCain was a POW from 1967 through 1973, 2 years before the Steelers won their first Super Bowl. And as for the ownership shakeup the team currently faces.
KDKA journalist, let's make sure we don't ask any hard questions. Let's make sure we don't do that, because that then you might be accusable of journalism. Oh, Lord, it's another one of those moments where I'm thrilled. You know, I love the time I spend behind this microphone. I love the time that I spend with you guys. But I would dearly love to, if we just had a little bit more reach. Because you know what? It's one thing. It is one thing. Oh, by the way, I haven't gotten to the punchline yet, have I? Wait a minute. John McCain has told this story before. In fact, he put it in print. He put it in his 1999 scrawlings, Faith of My Fathers. Yeah, he wrote that, sure. But in 1999, he said, once my condition had stabilized, my interrogators resumed their work. Demands for military information were accompanied by threats to terminate my medical treatment if I did not cooperate. Eventually, I gave them my ship's name and squadron number and confirmed that my target had been the power plant. Pressed for more useful information, I gave the names of the Green Bay Packers offensive line and said they were members of my squadron. Yeah. It even got translated into a film on the Arts and Entertainment Network. The actor who plays Bomber John, when he's being asked to give up the names of the men in his squadron, he says, Star, Greg, McGee, Davis, Adderley, Brown, Ringo, Wood. Those would, of course, be the Green Bay Packers, not the Pittsburgh Steelers. And those would also be offensive players and not defensive players. But see, when you're, no offense. I mean, I'm 45 and it happens this way too. But when you're as old as McCain is, stuff happens inside your brain. So there he is. He's been walking around with a bunch of old, nasty old coal whores who give him a steel curtain defensive, the steel curtain jersey that's a commemoration of the Pittsburgh Steelers' ferocious, the defensive line. And suddenly, in John McCain's, in the thin gray settling that passed for brains between John McCain's ears, suddenly he's back in North Vietnam again, and they're going to terminate his medical care, and he's got to give, and it's the name of the defensive line of the Pittsburgh Steelers from 1967, who were 4-9-1. Yeah, really. This is not some piece of trivia. This is real. Because it's not about an old man forgetting something or not remembering accurately. This is pandering. This is, in fact, a deliberate case. This isn't the one where you're all worn out and you go, "Hello, Cleveland." No, this is deliberate. This is an attempt to pander to people in Western Pennsylvania and make them think he's a regular guy when he's not. He's a son of privilege. Just like George Bush is a son of privilege. He was a legacy appointment to Annapolis, just like George Bush was a legacy admit to Yale. These people who talk about a McCain presidency being a third Bush term are exactly correct, but they don't understand the depth to which they are correct. John McCain is one generation earlier of George Bush. John McCain calls himself an Arizonan when, at best, what you could probably call him is a Panamanian. George Bush calls himself a Texan when, in fact, he is a born Connecticuter. He's a nutmegger. Sorry, Connecticut listeners. It just is. This is serious business. And frankly, this isn't about, you know, what you called your wife, the C word, you know, where everybody, oh, I can't say that on television. This is real. This is like going out without your flag pin on. This is lying about the NFL, by God. This is lying about one of America's most cherished commercial enterprises. This shows the character of a man when he'll lie about the National Football League. If he'll lie about the NFL, what else will he lie about? What's he going to say when he gets to St. Louis? What's he going to say? What's he going to say when he gets to Chicago? Will he tell them that he? What'll he say in New York City? That he named the 7 blocks of granite from Fordham? Hint: one of them was Vince Lombardi. A man who'll lie about the NFL and suck eggs. This is serious. We may not be able to, because see, if we could get this to grow and move and stuff, we may not be able to get America to pay attention to the fact that he's dumber than a handful of homemade stupid, and that he thinks Czechoslovakia is still a country and is one miscue away from talking about Siam and their funny bald-headed king. We may not be able to get America to pay attention to that. We may not even be able to get America to pay attention to the fact that John McCain wants America's sons and daughters in Iraq for 100 years, or at least that's what he said. We may not be able to get him to pay attention to any of that. We may not be able to get America to pay attention to the fact that his chief economic advisor, Phil Graham, whose economic PhD thesis is all of 67 pages and contains no mathematics whatsoever, we may not be able to get America to pay attention to the fact that the chief economic advisor says the rest of America is a bunch of lily-livered, panty-waisted whiners. We may not be able to do any of that. But America damned well would pay attention to a man who will lie about sports. Jeez, it's worse than being a Mets fan and pretending you're a Yankees fan, or a Jets fan and pretending you're a Giants fan, because I mean those are character issues now, aren't they? Never mind whether or not this man's voted to support torture. This man lies about sports, and America actually cares about sports. America will tune in play by play to make sure that they get all the ins and outs of a professional sporting event. They won't necessarily, they're certainly not clamoring for more Iraq coverage or more Afghanistan coverage. No. But do not screw up the sports report. And don't lie. Don't lie about your team. You think there's anybody in the state of Alabama who, even under torture or duress, would holler, "Go Vols"? Do you think there's any, do you think there's anybody at Texas A&M who, with fingernails being ripped out, would holler hook 'em horns? Hell no! But John McCain is a cynical, untruthful, deceitful, mendacious old liar. And what this says more than anything else is that John McCain thinks that the people of Western Pennsylvania are stupid and that they wouldn't catch on. Newsflash for John McCain. They might not catch on to something policy related, but they will damn sure catch on to out and out lying about one's personal loyalties. Yeah. So we'll be back in a couple of minutes. Light up the phones if you want to. There's a good 50 minutes of conversation left in the evening. I hope you will. 304-658-3333 on your nickel. On ours, 877-443-2366. This is America's listener-supported liberal voice. I'm Bob, and we'll be right back.
Because I can. It's the pleasure and the privilege of the richest people in the land. Don't you understand? I don't give a damn for you. I don't give a damn for you. That's the truth. I lie because I. It's not stealing if it's legal. Let's just change the rules. Besides, it's middle management's fault. If they can't cook my books right, they're fired, they're fools. Let them be the ones who get caught. Taxes are for losers. I'm a winner, you see. Money is the magic stuff that set me free. Privilege of the richest people in the land. Don't you understand? I don't give a damn for you. I don't give a damn for you. That's the truth. I lie because I can. Because I can. I lie. Somebody feel the need to print up 10 or 15 million Power of Pride stickers. Well, sure, there's the profit angle. I know some creep made millions off What Would Jesus Do? I I like those Who Would Jesus Bomb lapel pins. When did pride get crossed off the list of deadly sins? Or was that just another law passed by some old men back in the first century A.D. to keep the people in their place? There's no power in pride. Pride is a man who goes to war to save face. And pride is a man who cannot tell the truth that might make him look weak. There's no power in pride. Our sin is pride, and we know it. We just can't bear to talk about it. Those stickers right next to the Jesus fish we bought down at the Christian store. I'm not bashing Jesus, but how about we read what Jesus said for once? I say for balance we take in a little Buddha. Johnny Cash. America is the land of the free on paper, my friend. There's still hope because we've yet to reach the promised land. We have lots of work to do, sisters and brothers, and pride will only set us back. There's no power in pride. Pride will take you down every time. There's no power in pride. Pride will take you down.
Tonight's final hour of Head On begins now. 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Here's Buck.
Coming up on 10 minutes after the hour. Welcome to another week on the horn. Final hour for tonight. Program note. If you're on Billy Shears' email list, and you didn't get to hear Night Sounds over the weekend, make sure you get the show. It was a beauty. It was a dandy. First anniversary, one solid year, Billy Shears. That's some rock and roll hero stuff. Listen to the show. You'll enjoy the heck out of it. Another program note, not nearly as cheerful. I got a call from Peter Godbold. I don't mean for that to have such a sound of the futility to it or resignation, but believe me, that sound was in his voice too. Bob, internet's down again. So I checked, had a quick peek into the chat room, and no, I do not see our beloved Peter Godbold in the chat room. So I'm under the assumption that the two rusty and dented tomato cans with a string in the middle have gone out for Peter again. Not his fault. So I'll probably have to find a rerun for you from this week or last week. Not from this week. This is a brand new week. Think about it, Bob. Come on. Get with the program. Get your head in the game, Bob. Where are you, Bob? No, we'll have a rerun for you unless a miracle transpires and I hear something from Peter in the very, very near future. Sorry. And he is even more sorry. And that, by the way, for those of you inclined to ask, if you don't already know, our little musical interlude was a couple of tracks by the incomparable Will Kimbrough, and from his masterpiece album, Americanitis. And by the way, for those of you who say, yeah, well, but, you know, buy a whole album, I mean, maybe it's only got a couple of good songs. No. No, no. The album's a couple of years old now, and if it's not in your collection, it ought to be, because the whole album is pure genius. And you would, yeah. And if Will tours anywhere near you, he's another one. He's another one. Get out and go see him, because you'll be supporting an artist who is using his art to further the hopes, dreams, and ambitions of his family. And you will be participating in something that's real, it's live, it hasn't been focus grouped. I think his the website is just very simply willkimbrough.com, willkimbrough.com. He's been on the show. And he is just a darn good liberal southerner. Maybe he likes to call himself a progressive. But he's one of those people that make the South a very special place. So, okay, moving on time. I'm really disturbed by this international... Disturbed, yes. Shocked, no. By this International Committee of the Red Cross report. They have come out and somebody has finally said it. The International Committee of the Red Cross says the Bush administration is guilty of war crimes. Period. No qualifiers, no guilty of war crimes on days that don't end in Y, no guilty of war crimes on months that don't have an R in it. The International Committee of the Red Cross says definitively that the Bush administration is guilty of war crimes. I think a big, bold print copy of the report should be sent to Nancy Pelosi and Harry Reid and Steny Hoyer and all the blue dogs and mugwumps who don't have the stomach to do anything more in Congress than cash their stinking paychecks. Because but then again, it's just another to add to the long, tiresome list of stuff that we can be absolutely 110% rock solid, lead pipe cinch, Colonel Mustard in the conservatory with the candlestick certain that the Bush administration, or that the Republican Party, would have impeached and will impeach any Democratic president caught doing it. No doubt. No doubt at all. Meanwhile, from our side, in the Congress, in control, in a majority, hear the crickets? Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, just another boring story that's really not worth paying attention to. Just another story confirming that George Bush is, yes, a war criminal. Not that you... I mean, it pisses you off, it pisses me off. But I'll guarantee you that the sale of Anheuser-Busch to InBev will generate more overall news so-called content than the International Committee of the Red Cross formally naming the Bush administration as chargeable war criminals. Bet? Guarantee it. You don't want to bet with me on this one. It's already true. Yeah, beloved Budweiser, purveyor of America's favorite rice-based beer, is going to be sold. It's not even close. Deal's done. The company is Belgian, and they merged a few years back with a Brazilian outfit, and they control brands like Stella Artois, Beck's, Bass, and a very popular Brazilian beer called Brahma. Brahma, by the way, it's almost like this is a match that should have happened. Because in Portuguese, if you go and look at YouTube, Brahma has TV ads down there that are every bit as funny and every bit as witty and engaging as anything that Budweiser has ever put out. So what it tells me is that Brahma and Budweiser are much better advertised than they are consumed. I love the Budweiser ads. The lizards were my favorite. Oh, Louie, you're begging for a pink slip. Just loved those. That is not French. I speak French. Oh, genius. And Bud Light's greatest American hero, real American hero ads. Pure genius. Hate the beer. Love the ads. But, of course, let's see. The repig-licking governor of Missouri opined in this matter. Barack Obama opined in this matter. There was no great Sturm und Drang when Molson acquired Coors. There was no weeping and wailing and gnashing of teeth in particular. I suppose there was some, but not to the extent it has been with Budweiser. When South African Brewing acquired Miller. But Budweiser? You mean our fermented rice beverage is no longer going to be made by a giant American corporation, but instead is going to be made by a giant international conglomerate? Well, I just don't feel so patriotic about that no more. I don't know if I can drink it. Now, the kitty in the ash heap on all of this is that Budweiser did this to itself. Their sales have been flat for years, just like their beer would be if they didn't artificially carbonate it. And can you tell I really don't like Budweiser? Not that I'm drinking beer anymore. And the family leadership, you know, if you thought the Coors family were a bunch of horses' asses, which they are, they're only considered to be the horses' asses that they are because nobody ever really compares them to the Bush family. This is the Bush family with the C between the S and the H, not the Kenny Bunkport tourists. No, the Bush family, including August A. Bush IV. I mean, he's almost like a little George Bush mini-me, wrecking cars and killing women and getting away with it and all kinds of sleazy stuff. Until he was just promoted into the position where he could ruin a company that's been around since 1860. It took 148 years to build Budweiser to where it was, and it took, 140 years to build Budweiser to where it was, and it took one generation of pampered, spoiled, dumber than a bag of hammers, the pseudo-royalty to destroy it. It's kind of like, it's a lot like the United States of America. 226 years to build and 8 years for the spoiled, idiotic son of some supposed corporate aristocracy of this country to destroy it. There's a lot of parallels. Now, see, look, I have just proven myself. I've spent more time talking about this than I have about the fact that the International Committee of the Red Cross has named the George Bush administration as war criminals. Because it's easier to talk about? Because Budweiser actually means more to America than not torturing and killing? Oy. Yeah, because of that. Mighty hard to stomach. It just is. Let's go to the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob, it's Preston.
Well, hey, Preston, it's Monday.
I know, I thought I'd break with tradition.
Got to get out of the rut.
Exactly. And it had been a couple weeks.
It had been indeed, and I trust you had a good trip to Omaha?
I did. My sister lives there, and my nieces and nephews, and my dad came out from North Carolina. So we had a little family reunion that was nice.
Oh, that is wonderful. And you managed to dodge the rotten weather.
Yeah, just barely. I mean, they had that incredible storm like 2 days before I arrived. They actually had, in the western part of the city, 115-mile-an-hour winds and a bunch of rain in a very short span. Trees were all over the place. And, it was actually the night before I left, I turned on Current TV, that channel that I like so much, where people send in their own video pods. And I was watching this pod, and I was like, wow, it kind of looks like Omaha. And it was Omaha. And this person there had videotaped what was going on. It's really interesting. But, yeah, while I was there, the weather was actually real nice. And I think I had mentioned to you in an email that although Omaha is considered a very red town, Nebraska is a very red state in more ways than one.
Oh, they even make their football team wear it.
Yeah. But still, wherever I go, I always find something going on. And most recently, I don't know if you know the band Bright Eyes.
I've heard the name. Yes, I have.
Yeah, in fact, they became kind of famous when they were on Saturday Night Live a couple years ago. And the singer, they sang a song called When the President Talks to God.
Yes, okay, that's what, yes.
Yeah. And my sister actually knows his mom. They work together in the Omaha Public Schools. And they are this band, they've had a lot of success. And they opened a club called the Slowdown or something like that. And they're bringing all these independent musicians to town. And right next to the club, there's, I think it's like, well, I know a couple doors down, they also opened up a small movie theater to bring independent, films and art films and documentaries. And there's something else within this complex that they've created. But, there's that sort of development going on in a place you wouldn't really expect it.
Well, you had said in your email that you were going to search out the signs of progressive life while you were there. It sounds like you had some success.
Yeah. I mean, just a few hours after I'd been there, my sister gave me a little tour. And I think I may have mentioned this. They've got a vegetarian restaurant there that I had known about. It's been there for years. But I learned recently that each year they sponsor a little progressive film festival there in their restaurant. And people trying to build community in their little ways. And then I was walking along the streets, kind of in the downtown area of Omaha, and a couple of young ladies walked by, and one of them had this Shaq 7 T-shirt on, and that's that kind of radical animal rights group, and that released some lab animals, I think in England, and they're facing a long time in prison. But so, you know, there's some consciousness of these things. And actually, a little bit of Omaha trivia, Malcolm X was born there.
Yeah, that surprised me when I saw that I had no idea. Yeah. But I'll never forget it now.
Yeah, and somebody there is working on developing like a little museum of sorts. So
that'll take some doing.
Yes, it will. Yes, it will.
I don't think you could call that anything but a labor of love. It's not like, say, the George Bush Library, where they've actually did you see this, Preston? The Bush administration's actually been caught red-handed selling access to the president in exchange for six-figure donations to the Bush Library.
Yeah, but I was kind of happy to see they were having a hard time developing their own library for Bush. Didn't SMU kind of?
No, it's not. The fight is still on.
Okay.
This story that broke, I guess, I'm trying to think of the newspaper that nailed them. Oh, the Times of London. The Times of London did it, and they had a secret recording, a secret video of one of George Bush's BFFs sitting there saying, well, you know, I can arrange it, I can get you straight through, and probably not the president, but the high-level administration figures. All I need is a six-figure donation. You know, it should probably take about $600,000 of it, $200,000, you know, that kind of thing, and I can get you right into the White House.
Mm, there you go.
And that, you know, that's another one, Preston. That's another. Nancy Pelosi's not in. Nancy's not interested.
For 3, 4, 5 days straight. Instead, we'll take that clip from Jesse Jackson and, you know, beat him over the head some more, you know, with an intemperate remark, but. You know, his years and years and years of talking about disparities in income and disparities in how laws are applied and disparities in education and health care and on and on and on. Silence, pretty much. And he even has his own show now on the weekends, Keep Hope Alive Radio. And I was sure to tune in this weekend. He actually was in town here in Denver, and he spoke at a couple of churches, and he broadcasted his show from the Progressive radio station studios, which are within the Clear Channel's headquarters, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And it was excellent, and he had a panel of about 3 or 4 people. You know, and we're very intimate with a wide range of serious issues, you know, not just in the African-American community, but working-class people in general. But, you know, they kind of elaborated on kind of their concerns about, you know, how the comments that Obama has been making towards, you know, focused towards the black community, which... You know, he's right. I'm not saying he's wrong, and they weren't saying that he was wrong. They just wanted to expand on that issue and, you know, in its context, the larger context. It's as if, you know, I'm sure in South Africa, the ruling establishment there love to share stories of, you know, how those people in the shanty towns need to, you know, personal responsibility and do this, that, and the other thing for themselves. And, you know, there's probably some truth to it. You know, really effective problem.
But, I've had some new thinking going through my brain about a lot of this stuff, Preston, and that is when I hear, and even if they are so-called leaders in the black community or whatever, stand up and berating African-American men to be better fathers, and, you know, Obama says, you know, fatherhood begins at conception or parenthood begins, all that kind of stuff. Okay, I get the point. But where's the silence of it really is quite impressive. where are all the people standing up and telling young, irresponsible, white men
exactly
that they need to be better fathers, that they need to be fathers? You know, because it seems to me, Preston, that it plays into that same old hateful stereotype that the only people we've got to talk to about social problems are African Americans, and that's just so much BS.
Yep, and that's what the apartheid ideologues did when they were, you know, when they were running a system of oppression and exploitation.
I mean, anybody want to run the numbers on the number of child advocate office cases all across America, where the recovery of child support cases are against white deadbeat dads as opposed to black deadbeat dads? Mm-hmm. Guess what? White wins by it's not even close.
Mm-hmm. Same goes with, drug use statistics. The majority of people using drugs are white people, but the majority of people in jail for drugs are black and brown people. The right wing, they just totally seized upon this moment. They also used it to kind of support what Cosby was saying earlier on. See, Obama was saying what Cosby was saying, and Cosby got all that grief. And it's, again, an emotionally potent oversimplification. What Cosby had said was a whole array, a lot of very insulting and degrading things. Michael Eric Dyson wrote an excellent book. And
blistered the hide off Cosby in the process, yeah.
He sure did. So it was just annoying to see this this comment, played over and over and over again with a running commentary from all these, people working for the establishment. And, another thing about Obama saying that to the black community, he actually went to Africa a couple of years ago. There's a DVD about it, actually, something like Mr. Obama Goes to Africa or something like that. It's an interesting DVD, but like you, I've kind of had some new thinking about that. And part of it I liked a lot, but there was this part where he made a lot of news. I think he was in Kenya, and when he was there, he made a lot of news for telling the government there that they've got to clean up their corruption. And again, there's
coals to Newcastle. I mean, pot meat kettle.
Yeah, exactly. Again, there's truth to that. There's corruption, but yeah, exactly. But if you really want to impress me, stand up on the floor of Congress and tell your coworkers about how, DC needs to clean up its corruption. And you're telling that story about Bush renting himself out, And so many of these countries that we, blame their problems on, their alleged failings, if they weren't corrupt in Africa, or if they weren't corrupt in Guatemala or so many other places, we'd do everything we can to overthrow them and call them communists.
Sure.
If they really served the people and said, we're going to take our resources and apply them to our own society, and we're not going to let ourselves be ripped off anymore. Yeah. We'll see how long that lasts.
Well, there's a whole lot of social ills in America that could be solved with one great big, relatively long general strike.
Yeah.
But I'm talking a little bit out of my depth here. The game has been rigged because the things like, and I, oh boy, I may really be wrong about this, but if I'm not mistaken, it's Taft-Hartley puts the load in the dice on this, because unions can get busted beyond all recognition for taking part. Let's say one union goes out and another union supports and blah, 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 or God knows, just calls for a general strike.
Yeah.
No, then it hits the fan.
Yep. You're right. Taft-Hartley is a big factor on that. And another quick point on the Africa, kind of scolding Africa for their corruption. again, it leaves out the larger context. You know, that's what so often happens, is leave out the larger context of various issues. It leaves out the role that, huge agribusiness firms have played in devastating so many livelihoods and local economies, like Archer Daniels Midland and Cargill and their collaborators.
But there's nothing. The thing is, though, it seems very frustratingly like an unlearned lesson, Preston, because, you know, there I was sitting and watching Gandhi this weekend. I don't know what got all over me that I decided to watch Gandhi, but it's one of my favorite films.
Mm-hmm, sure.
And there's the story of the farmers in, what was it called, Champaran province or community or whatever, and they're getting squeezed by their landlords for cash rent payments when before a portion of their indigo crop had been taken as rent payment, but no one's buying indigo anymore because the dyeing and the weaving is all being done back in England again. And so the people are starving. Now that may seem a little bit quaint or provincial to us, simply because it has that element of, so feudalistic. But really, when you get right down to it, what's the difference between that and a community that gets, a nation that gets devastated by a corporate pullout?
Right.
Or a nation that has its crops ruined by genetically modified hybridized seed that they're not allowed to store for next year.
Yeah.
There's no difference.
Yeah. Yeah, I'd love to hear the candidates' opinions on genetically modified organisms. You know, it's amazing. This is a huge issue that transcends Democrat, Republican, you know, labels. It's something that a lot of people are concerned about, including, just a lot of consumers. Because of Whole Foods and Wild Oats and kind of this movement among gardeners to avoid that kind of stuff. So there's a lot more public awareness than it seems at times. But it gets no coverage, not even on NPR, which I like a lot. They do a lot of good work, but, you know, ADM's a major underwriter for public TV.
Oh, sure it is.
Yeah, and Monsanto, they're real quick on the lawsuits, and they hounded a couple of Fox reporters in Florida about a story they tried to do on their bovine growth hormone drug, and so a lot of media outlets are real skittish about taking Monsanto on. You know, that's the kind of company that really deserves to get
UPS disconnected. Cannot retrieve information from UPS.
But,
UPS
yeah,
communication
sure
established.
McCain and Obama hear a lot from the lobbyists from Monsanto, but bless her, I saw Cynthia McKinney last night on C-SPAN. They're replaying her kind of acceptance speech, her speech at the Green Party convention in Chicago. And, she was talking about Frankenfoods. And, again, you know, she's not going to win, obviously, but she's saying these words that, within the establishment's guidelines or boundaries, very rarely are going to be spoken. So.
And, see, I want people like Cynthia McKinney to help make things better. And I want her to enter, and what I guess I don't understand is why, and I'm not criticizing her motives, but why she can't stand up and, you know, Dennis Kucinich could use a little help right now.
Yeah, yeah.
And Dennis is still working inside the Democratic Party, and I think Dennis will continue to do so. But the answer is not for the progressives, to leave the Democratic Party. The answer is for more progressives to, at least by my lights, is for more progressives to get into the Democratic Party.
I think the answer is both and more. You know, I think some people, you know, have decided that there's something they could do or want to do outside of it, and others inside of it. And she spent a lot of time inside of it, and she got knocked around a lot, and she could have used a lot of support. when she was getting thrashed around. She was one of the earliest people to bring about, you know, articles of impeachment, I think even before Kucinich. And she's had so many forces come after her on so many different issues. You know, she was the one talking about how much alike the cluster bombs look like are the food aid we were trying.
Sure, yeah, they're both little yellow packages.
Yep. The media's beating on her all the time. She's framed as an anti-Semite and on and on and on. I think it can wear people down. I was happy to see one of my favorite groups of all time, REM, was always big supporters of hers. And they chased her out of Congress, but a couple of years later she came back. And I think in total she spent about 12 years. And she is constantly getting death threats and stuff in her family. So I could see how she could kind of drift away and just try something else for a while. So it goes. And, you know, maybe she'll be back. Who knows? Maybe someday she'll run for mayor or something. Who knows? That'd be great. She did mention something interesting, though, that we lose sight of. There are 200 elected officials of the Green Party out there. You know, it's small, you know, city councils and stuff.
Right, that's where you build that, frankly.
True. But we do have some great Democrats, for sure, doing the same thing, and others joining. I wish more of our conversation actually would highlight, you know, there's so much of a focus on the presidential race. You know, I understand that to a degree, but there's so many other races, really important ones going on.
Well, take, you know, one step down to the Senate and the race between Norm Coleman and Al Franken. Now, I'm not under any misconception that Al Franken is some sort of fire-breathing liberal.
Mm-hmm.
But he's certainly a far cry better than Norm Coleman, and arguably better than Jesse Ventura, too. And frankly, the dirty, filthy stuff that Norm Coleman has started, and this is worth paying attention to because it deals with an issue that is very near and dear to my heart, Preston, and that is organized labor and the rights of working people to organize among themselves and form a union and be dealt with as a union and to bargain in good faith as a union. Al Franken is clearly behind the Employee Free Choice Act, which allows workers to check off a card and form a union that way, instead of the hopelessly dummied up uphill one foot in a bucket process that the NLRB mandates in the form of what the right wing likes to call secret ballot elections. So Norm Coleman's got this ad that is totally 100% doesn't have a grain of truth in it, running in Minnesota, trying to tell people in Minnesota that, lo and behold, he stands for the right of working people to organize and have a secret ballot to form their union. And it's not a Norm Coleman ad. It's one of those AstroTurf ads, Preston, that, like a 527 or whatever.
Casino community group or civic
right,
group.
Right. Yeah,
actually some PR firm.
Yeah. Phonied up and dummied up from the get go. And it comes from a group, what a giveaway this is. It comes from a group that calls itself, I'm trying to find it here, I've got it in one of my tabs. There it is. They call themselves the Coalition for a Democratic Workplace. And what they are is a group a group comprised of the Retail Industry Leaders Association, Walmart, the Associated Builders and Contractors, the National Association of Manufacturers, and of course, the U.S. Chamber of Commerce, none of whom have ever seen a union, that they didn't want broke or busted.
Mm-hmm. That's right. That's right.
But so this organization's running these ads that compares Al Franken and unions to, of course, and you know where the mob.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. We've got an AstroTurf campaign going on here. Ward Conley, Connerly?
Yeah.
His group, something like Citizens for Civil Rights or something, to end affirmative action of any sort, which helps a lot of women, actually. It's not just minorities, but it helped break the old boys club in development. And he's backed by these very large development firms. And I spread a lot of various things. It's just like the country's still valid. And the village and his connections with these developers, he's just out for civil rights, allegedly. And Ms. Magazine actually had an excellent article on the ins and outs of this issue and the complexities of it. And it's really going to concentrate wealth even more tightly if it passes. And again, really good, effective propaganda campaigns. You can frame the arguments in particular ways to, you know, get people to go along with it. But the ramifications are real problematic. You know, and back to, you had mentioned general strikes and how effective they can be. That's very much tied into another issue of mass transit, because oftentimes an important element of a general strike is the role of transit employees. I mean, they stop running the trains and the subways and the buses, and the machine shuts down. There's no ignoring it. And I think that's part of the reason why mass transit's been so, you know, underfunded and, you know, moves to privatize it more and more and, you know, kind of let it dry up and die on the vine, or shrink it so small they can drown it in the bathtub, you know, that kind of
thing. There you go. That's the one.
Yeah. And I just found this book, something like The Motorization of the United States, and it talks about how we became so dependent on the auto culture, kind of the automobile industrial complex, and our mass transit was more displaced than any other nation, you know, comparable industrialized nation in the world. And the political ramifications of those decisions by people who have bought our government and control it.
Well, you know, it's interesting you would mention that, Preston, because I was out and about a little bit today, and I noticed that one of our little West Virginia mass transit buses, and I'm not talking about a full-size bus, this is like a little, you know, vanish sort of thing. Yeah, shuttle, exactly. And it was going from Fayetteville to what I assumed was Summersville, which is a trip of about, 30 miles. But in going to Summersville, I was moved to think, you know, what happens when it gets to Summersville and lets somebody off? Because there's sprawl out by the four lane, but then the actual in-town part is 4 or 5 miles away. How does a person who gets dropped at the four lane get into town? Or if you're in town and you want to go out to whatever's, you know, Food Line or whatever, the grocery store out of the four lane, how do you get there?
Yeah.
And those are all things that have been promulgated by our car culture. And nobody loves an automobile more than I do.
Mm-hmm.
But the fact of the matter is, we've made a mess for ourselves that it's going to be really hard to dig out of.
Yeah, yeah. And likewise, I'm certainly not saying cars can't be convenient and even a lot of fun. But again, it's having options and not making people utterly dependent upon the cars. And, you know, giving people who, say, don't have very good vision options, giving them more mobility. Or people who are young, too young to have a license, more mobility. People who've been out drinking, giving them more mobility. We have had a mess created. It, has a lot and is very conscious. This is not a free market thing at all. There's another book on the issue called Zoned Out about the very, you know, they say they're for free markets and against government regulations. That's nonsense. They were very much, the auto industry, the oil industry were very much involved in constructing regulations that would create this sprawl. Again, creating dependency on their product and shutting out mass transit which would interfere, which would cut down on their revenue growth. Can't have that. So put up plenty of regulations so that you have an auto culture. And, you know, I mean...
even something as silly as Who Framed Roger Rabbit? Do you remember that?
You know, I haven't seen that.
Oh, golly Moses, that's just a lighthearted little lark for some. But even it touches on the killing off, and these were real things that happened, the killing off of the trolleys and so forth in Southern California with the advent of car culture.
And
it was a very deliberate killing.
Yes, it was. I mean, I think Standard Oil and Firestone, they were actually convicted of conspiracy and fined like, you know, $5,000, you know, but that's just a business expense to make millions and millions and millions of dollars. And I think very much China move into this car culture. You know, I don't think that's something that's just kind of an indigenous thing happening on its own. We've got all these economic hitmen flying out there advising and consulting Chinese government officials on how they should direct their own economies. In fact, they are building California-type suburban sprawl neighborhoods now.
Well, of course, because that's what we have told the world is a measure of success.
Mm-hmm.
Oddly enough, you don't have French or German villages where, you know, you walk to the greengrocers, you walk to the charcuterie or the boulangerie. None of that is presented to the world as a viable alternative. It's got to be strip malls. There's got to be a lot of neon lights. It's got to be out away from where you live, or it's no good.
Mm-hmm. That's right. That's right. It's a mess, but there is a movement of sorts developing. It's called New Urbanism. We've got a new urbanism community here in Denver at the old airport called, you know, Stapleton.
Yeah.
That was abandoned for the DIA. That was developed along that model of new urbanism, where it's a mix of homes and shops and entertainment and government services and walkable pedestrian, you know, walking's encouraged. And you know, the streets and the sidewalks are set up so that you can feel like you can ride your bike without taking your life into your hands, you know?
And you know, something else occurs, and this is all, see, they turn me loose and let me watch a movie or two over the weekend, and it informs the way I think about what happens during the week. In watching Gandhi, Preston, there are scenes where he talks about the need for the Indian people to produce Indian goods.
Mm-hmm.
So that they can become self-sustaining. And then there's the scene where he takes the trip to England and visits a textile mill, I think, in Leeds. And the question of what, you know, he says, you know, this is going to be a hardship on the British people. But someone says, you know, we'll figure out, the workers, you know, we'll figure out a way, we'll be all right, blah, 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 blah. And I couldn't help being impressed watching that and wondering what Gandhi would say about what American and global capitalism has done in terms of going to a place like India, because they know they can pay substandard wages to get people to do jobs that Americans and other Westerners had been doing to provide for their own society. And I wonder if Gandhi, and I would like to say he would have, but I wonder if Gandhi would have looked up and said, well, of course, it makes sense that call centers that are dealing with American people would be on American soil. Or, of course, it makes sense that computers being sold to American people would be manufactured on American soil. Because what he was talking about was that, you know, his focus was the Indian people, but his recognition was that any place that seeks to be sovereign must be able to provide for itself.
Yeah, it would break his heart to see what's going on now. But interestingly, there are people who have picked up his torch. There's a woman named Vandana Shiva who's talking about food sovereignty for India and and all sorts of other issues, sustainability issues, biopiracy is the title of one of her books. Just a fascinating woman, and others. There have been huge protests that we never hear about in the global south in particular. Hundreds of thousands of people making a ruckus when globalization, corporate globalization plans come to town, when IMF is in town, stuff like that. And speaking of jobs, moving and being done by slave labor, I came upon, and I didn't hear of this film, but a friend of mine in Mexico City alerted me to it, and it stars Jennifer Lopez. It's called Border Town. And I was amazed that she was a star of this film, and I'd never heard anything about it. And then I found the DVD. Apparently it went to DVD rather quickly. I got it. I watched it this weekend, and I learned quickly why I hadn't heard much about it, because it is such a politically potent film. In it, she plays a reporter that goes to Juarez and learns about the conditions of the workers making our computer screens and TVs, and talks about the violence against women going on there, and the effect of NAFTA, and how businesses move there to avoid environmental regulations and labor regulations.
Indeed.
And this, how this system of predatory capitalism has kind of, spilled over, and there are these predatory men. A lot of dysfunction in this town, it has a lot to do with, this hideous economic system that these people are living in. And, I was really moved by it. Martin Sheen is in it as well, actually. He plays an editor of a newspaper that kind of puts the kibosh on her story that she was writing. I was pleased to see it. So again, so much bad news, but there are these efforts going on. In fact, I just learned one of the biggest movements in the world. It's called La Via Campesina. And it's called, and La Via Campesina basically means the farmer's way or something like that. And it's comprised of hundreds of thousands of peasants and small farmers around the world, mostly in the southern hemisphere, but also the north. People like José Bové, who you may remember, the French farmer who bulldozed that McDonald's.
Yes, 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 yes.
He's a part of this movement. And, I just found one of the first books published on it, and it's been a fun read. So Monsanto and all of them, they're big and bad and awful, and they've got their hitmen and their lobbyists and the media. But still, there's power in these people's movements, and it's fun to watch.
Well, it is fun to watch, and it's also encouraging, because whereas we look at our political system, oh gosh, we're out of time, Preston. Oops, I got to get out of here.
Good catching up with you, Bob.
Talk to you soon, Preston.
You bet. Bye bye.
Bye. I was about to go off onto a whole other idea, and I'm fresh out of show. So thanks, everybody. Thanks to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the folks at Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. Go to Coal River Mountain Watch. Learn how to be a part of the solution to save not only Appalachia, but this nation and this world from the depredations of mountaintop removal. And always, 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 RMR, Gina, it's all for you.